Some helpful svarim on Hilchos Mila are, of course, we're going to mention almost all of them, so you'll pick it up as we go along. But of course, Sefer Abris, which Rabbi Tamla mentioned, the Otzar Abris is excellent, four volumes, written by Yossel of the Mile. Excellent work, really. You have to have it. It's one of those things you have to have. Another Sefer you must own at some point in your career is Nishma Savram by Dr. Abraham. All the medical stuff that comes up in Hilchos Mila is there. And a Sefer which I would recommend you own, but I wouldn't say you have to own, is Encyclopedia Talmudic with Week by Dr. Steinberg. It's fantastic. So he has an Erech Mila, which is also very, very good. Just in terms of for the future, for Geirus, since most people are going to be learning Geirus before we have the next, I hope, learning Geirus before we have the next Hazarish year, to help their own, we really aren't that many on Geirus, unfortunately, because of its, because of the nature of Hilchos Geirus, that they don't print Kitzur Svarim really for Geirus, but there's one Sefer called Geirus Kilchasa, which just came back into print. They had it at the Svarim sale. It was supposed to be highlighted for our Talmidim. It wasn't, but it's still available around, and there's a doctorate by Menachem Finkelstein, a Bar Ilan doctorate, which is excellent if you want to do a little more advanced research in Hilchos Geirus. Okay, but let's get started with Hilchos Mila. We're basically going to go along the Seder of Shulchan Aruch, starting with Simen Reish Samach. And the first thing that the Shulchan Aruch discusses in Reish Samach is that it's a mitzvah essay on the father to be mal his child. And Gedola mitzvah zu mishar mitzvah essay. This mitzvah is greater than all the other mitzvahs essay. So the Tashach and Sivkot and Aleph quotes a reason for this, because it has Yesh Bo Tzad Kares. If you don't fulfill it, you get Kares. Of course, we know there's only one other mitzvah essay, which if you don't fulfill, you get Kares, and that's Karban Pesach. So it has a unique distinction, much more than other mitzvah essay, in terms of that it has Kares. Based on this reason of the Shach, or this reality of Hilchos Mila, the Minchas Chinuch and Mitzvah Hey has, it must be Mitzvah Aleph, Mitzvah Hey has a Chiddush, or a Suffolk Chiddush Ladina. He's not sure. If generally we know by most mitzvahs essay, there's a rule, HaMevazvez al Yevazvez Yosem Mechomesh. Mara says it by Tzedakah, and the Rishonim apply to other mitzvahs essay, but the Ramon, Yerodeah, and Hochas Yarek Val Yavar, of course, by a Los essay, it's different. Even though by mitzvahs essay, it's HaMevazvez al Yevazvez Yosem Mechomesh, by a Los essay, you have to be Mevazvez Kol Hom Beso. So Mechassino's not sure. Since this mitzvah essay has kares, maybe you have to be mevazvez yosem mechomesh. You even have to give away more money like a los essay, because it has a punishment of kares. So the difference would be if you have a person who lives in a faraway land. Like, let's say he lives in, I don't know, pick your place. He's on shlichus from the Rebbe, and he has to do meal on his child, and he's not a mile. So he's going to have to fly in a mile, but it's going to cost him a lot of money to fly in a mile. Does he have to spend that much money to fly in a mile or not? So by most mitzvahs essay, we'd say, HaMevazez al Yevazez Yosem Mechaymesh, but perhaps by this mitzvahs essay, we don't apply that rule. And he would have to spend even more money.
Since you picked on the guys on Shulchan, so could he say, so when I go to the next Shulchan conference, does he have to spend much money even
for Milo Bismana?
For Milo Bismana, or can he say, in 6 months is the Shulchan conference, I'll be in Fahrenheit, I'll be 100 miles.
Excellent. When we get to the Chiyuv Kares, we'll address that. But see, I would say it's Machlokes Rambam and the Ravid, but when we get to the Chiyuv Kares, we'll discuss it a little more. The first part, though, of Siman Reish Samach, Sif Aleph, is that it's a mitzvah essay on the father to bimal his son. So the Smach actually counts two mitzvah essay, one mitzvah essay on the father, and one mitzvah essay on the son. After the son grows up, after he becomes bar mitzvah, it's his mitzvah essay. So the Smach says, because it's really two, one on the father and one on the son. Most Rishonim, though, do not count two mitzvahs essay. The Rambam and the Sefer Mitzvahs and the Sefer Achinuch all count it as one mitzvah, meaning it's really the son's mitzvah, but before he reaches the age of Gadlus, it's on the father to perform the mitzvah for the son. Rabbi Yerucham Fishel Perlau has a long piece about this. Well, he explained that that seems to be the nature of the mitzvah, according to most Rishonim, that it's a mitzvah on the father to see to it that the son does the mitzvah. That's why the Birkas Shmuel is a lomdish topic. The Birkas Shmuel on Kiddushin calls in Reb Chaim that after the son is older than 13, is no longer a mitzvah on the father at all. He's uninvolved.
Can't get kares for that.
No, the father never gets kares. It's only on the son. Of course, he can't get kares if he's less than 13. Right, and if the father doesn't do it, so then the Shulchan Aruch continues that it's on other people to do it. Because it's not really the father's mitzvah. It's a mitzvah for us, or the father, primarily the father, but it could be Aferim, to see to it that the son fulfills his mitzvah of Milah. However, even if if the father doesn't fulfill the mitzvah does fall to Aferim, as you see in Simon Reish Samach Aleph, Sif Aleph, nonetheless, the father has some sort of unique status. Sma counted as a separate mitzvah. We don't go that far, but there seems to be some sort of unique status that's awarded to the father. Where do you see this? So you see this in three places. If you're going through Hilchos Milah, you'll notice them on your own. Siman Reish Samach Hei Sif Beis. Shulchan Aruch quotes from the Rambam, who distinguishes between if the father is being ma'al versus if acherim are being ma'al, in the Nusach HaBrocha. When the father is being ma'al, so according to the Rambam, the mitzvah is limol es habein. If someone else is doing the milah, it's al hamilah. The Ramah disagrees, and the Ramah says we should always make the bracha of al hamilah, even if the father is doing it. But the Rambam feels that there's a distinction in the bracha, if the father is doing the milah or if acherim are doing the milah. What is that based on? So the Rambam's opinion in general is, if I'm doing a mitzvah for myself, I make the bracha, like, according to the Rambam, this is what should have been. Person's putting a mezuzah on their own door, they should make the bracha l'kvoa mezuzah. If I'm putting a mezuzah on your door, the bracha would be al kviyas mezuzah. Because I'm doing a mitzvah for you. If I'm doing a mitzvah for me, it's l'kvoa mezuzah. So it sounds like from the Rambam's distinction regarding the Nusach HaBracha, that when the father's doing the mitzvah, it sounds like it's his mitzvah. Now the Rambam doesn't count that as two separate mitzvahs, but there is obviously some sort of unique status that's awarded to the father, in terms of the fact that he gets to do the mitzvah first before Acherim, he has Kedima, and that translates into somehow being some sort of quasi his mitzvah. Similarly, the Ramah there, Siman Reish Samach Hei Sif Aleph, quotes a Yesh Omrim, which is the opinion of the Rambam, that if someone else is doing the milah, then someone else can make the bracha of Achnisa Barisa Shel Avram Avinu. If the father is there, then the father makes the bracha achnisa brevisa shel Avraham Avinu. And if the father is not there, someone else can make the bracha. I think then the Gra quotes, people who disagree, many disagree, that no, if the father is not there, nobody makes the bracha of achnisa brevisa shel Avraham Avinu. If the father's not there, that part of the mitzvah is gone. Also, in Siman Reish Samach Hei Sif Zayin, the Shulchan Aruch discusses the making a Shechiyanu on Milah. So he says if there's no father there, there's no Shechiyanu. The Rambam disagrees and he holds that the father could always make Shechiyanu. Wherever he happens to be, he can make Shechiyanu, even if he's not present. But either way, Shechiyanu seems to be linked primarily with the father. The Ramah says that the minhag is we don't make Shechiyanu at all on Milah. I'm sorry, the Ramah says we only make Shechiyanu. The Ramah says we only make Shechiyanu if it's a Bechor and if the father himself is doing the Milah. If the father is not doing the Milah or it's not the Bechor, you don't make a Shechiyanu. And then the Shach disagrees, I think, and the Shach says you never make a Shechiyanu. The minhag is you never make a Shechiyanu. So the Gra there wonders, how come we never make a Shechiyanu? So he quotes from the Rashba, the Lo Matzah, that he didn't find the good reason, I think. He wonders about this. How come we don't make a Shechiyanu? We never found the great reason. The Gra does quote from the Rav Yah that the reason we don't make a Shechiyanu is because of Tzara de Yanuka. But the Gra doesn't like that reason because he says when the father dies, let's say his son inherits the father, gets a Yerusha. So he makes a bracha of Shechiyanu on the house that he just inherited. So the guy is sitting there, picture the scene after the funeral, they tell him, here's the keys to the house, right after he tore Kriya, and he makes a Shechiyanu. There's no tsar there, but he still makes a Shechiyanu. But here, the baby is crying a little bit, so all of a sudden we dispense with the Shechiyanu, it doesn't make a lot of sense. So the Gra doesn't like the reason of the Rav Yah. So in Eretz Yisrael, I think the Grunics do make a Shechiyanu.
Eretz Yisrael, everyone makes a Shechiyanu.
Everyone makes a Shechiyanu, because everyone is Grunics, I guess. And I've never seen a Shechiyanu made by a Mila in America.
Isn't he even saying
that Anyway, but from those three halachas, from the Nusach HaBracha, from the, which we happen to not accept, the distinction between the father and the male, or from the Bracha V'Hachniso, or from the discussion of the Shechianu, we do see that there is some sort of unique status to the father, and that's by definition of the fact that he comes first. Additionally, the Gilyan Marsha, here at the beginning of Simen of Hilchos Mila, and Simen Reish Samech, says that Shlichus does not work. He quotes, I think, a Shach. It's also quoted later in the Pisrei Tshuva, at the beginning of Simen Reish Samech Dalet, of Katan Aleph. I think there he just quotes the Shach. That Shlichus does not work by Mila. Obviously, if the father doesn't know how to do Mila, he can ask someone else to do it. But if the father knows how to do it, he should not ask someone else. Shlichus doesn't work. So I think that Tzitzis HaChoshen explains that this comes from like a mitzvah shebegufo. Like shlichus doesn't work for putting on tefillin. The famous Tzitzis HaChoshen distinguishes when does shlichus work for mitzvahs, when does it not. That if it's a mitzvah shebegufo, shlichus does not work. This would be some sort of mitzvah shebegufo that shlichus doesn't work. So I think that's why Reb Chaim, they say, did mila on, I think, his first child. I think on Rav Moshe Reb Chaim did mila because he learned how to do it, because he held like this, the shlichus doesn't work. So he should preferably do it himself, so he did it himself on his first child. The Darkei Moshe, though, quotes many of Yisharim, the Shlichus does work. And if you look later in Shulchan Aruch, huh?
You only did it on his first child?
Yeah, and then if Simcha Zelig told him there was the dying and brisk, you know, enough. Maybe the next one you should hire the model.
Of course, I
mean. He obviously didn't do that great of a job, though. That's where the story goes. But one of the guys in Smicha over here, who's a doctor and in Smicha, I think performed mila on his child. He knew how to do it, and it's a mitzvah to do on. Seems like it's a mitzvah to do for yourself, and shlichus might not work. However, it said, the Darkei Moshe quotes Rishonim, the shlichus does work, and that's what it sounds like from Shulchan Aruch later. Sima Reish Samachay Sif Tes. Shulchan Aruch says Avi Habein Omed Al Amoyel. The Avi Habein stands next to the Moyel to tell him he's his shliach. Many Moholim will ask the father to tell me, appoint me as a shliach. That's based on this Shulchan Aruch. That you stand, you're supposed to stand next to the Moyol. The father shouldn't be standing in the back of Shul. He should be standing right next to the Moyol. And before the Mila, he should appoint him as a shliach. So it sounds like from that language of the Shulchan Aruch, that we don't accept the Shach and the Gilyan Marsha, and there's a question about that point, that it sounds like that this is, there is shlichus by Mila. Anyway, all this emphasizes the point, though, if there's no shlichus by Mila, not only is Mila perhaps a special mitzvah on the father, not to the extent that it's its own mitzvah, but he has some unique status. So much so, that unique status might go so far as to even be that it's a mitzvah shebegufo. The shlichus might not even work. An extreme version of that position.
I don't understand why you get it sooner.
I'm sorry?
What other cases of shlichus does the shaliach have to stand by next to?
It's to give the impression that he's your shliach, meaning you'd like to be doing it yourself.
You
it's your mitzvah. It's your father's mitzvah.
You appoint a shliach. Why do you have to be next?
Yeah, let's say you're not.
The meal is good.
Yeah.
But you're supposed to stand next to him. I think it's to kind of increase the notion that he's your shliach. Maybe it's kind of more. I don't know. I forget it. Maybe it's kind of like showing I'd like to do it myself, kind of like an emotional. Thing, but that we don't find those things codified usually.
Well, don't we say that there's something stronger than shlichus called omidalgalo?
Yes.
Right? So even if that's you're incompetent to do something by yourself,
no, that's not this.
Then you can have somebody do it.
That's if I'm standing over a katan.
So it's more powerful than shlichus, because shlichus you could send the person to do it by themselves. Uh-huh. But here the person can't even do it by themselves, but they can do it with your help.
I don't know. Could be. Not sure. The assumption of all this, the assumption at least of that point, is that the mitzvah of mila, if it's a mitzvah shebegufo, is the ma'isa mila. That might not be true. The mitzvah of mila might not be the ma'isa mila per se. It might be about being mahul. The fact that he has no more orla, that might be the mitzvah of mila, meaning it's a status, not a action. Where does this come from? It comes from a Gemara Menachos. It's a famous Gemara that David was once standing in the mikvah and he realized he was arum min ha-mitzvos, he had no mitzvah, so he got a chalishus hadas, and then he remembered, oh, that he still has mila. So the Mefarshim, I think we've shown him, this is a marach or zaruah, That's who it's quoted from. The Marachor Zerua asks, what do you mean he had the mitzvah of Mila? The mitzvah of Mila happened a long time ago. He's probably much older than 8 days old. So how could, what do you mean he has the mitzvah? The mitzvah of Mila is over with. So Marachor Zerua proves from here that the nature of the mitzvah of Mila is not the action of removing the Arla, it's being Mahul, to have, it's a status of having no Arla. In which case, it clearly cannot be a mitzvah shebegufo to perform the Mila, if it's a status, not necessarily an action. The idea of it being a status versus an action is relevant to the issue of anesthetics. Rabbi Temler discussed made the point that we know that children experience pain during Mila because there's an increased hormone level. The same hormones that are produced when someone experiences pain are produced during Mila. Now, David Shabtai has pointed out, and I think he's correct, is that those studies, it was done, it's a study that I think in pediatrics, one of the journals, that they experienced this, children who have Milos done in hospital, they've tested them and they experienced the same hormone elevations that people who are in pain experience. Now that's different because in hospitals they don't perform Mila like we perform Mila, they perform Mila with a clamp, so it takes 20 minutes or so. So then there's an elongated period of pain. Whereas our Mila, we don't necessarily have studies to show that the same pain which is experienced in the hospital would be by our Mila. Why would it be any different? It happens much quicker.
So I'm saying, why would you say there's no pain?
But the question is a child experiencing pain? If it would be an adult, of course it would be pain. But if they're used to assume the child didn't experience pain, the same way he doesn't see things the same way we see things, and they know that's a later developmental stage, and he doesn't feel things the same way we feel things.
And
cry. Isn't the crying a fairly good indication they're in pain?
Children cry for lots of reasons. Doesn't necessarily mean they're in pain.
You
it doesn't mean it's okay. But there was a study done to prove that there is pain. It was not the assumption previously. Was they didn't experience pain. That was a development that they experienced pain. So the development is not necessarily the same as our circumstances. But even so, let's assume that they do experience pain. So then Rabbi Temler also assumed that there's a mitzvah to be memaed in that tzar. Some would disagree with that. As he pointed out, based on the Medrash and Parshas Lech Lecha, that Avram was mitzta'er himself on purpose in order to increase his schar. So Rabbi Temler quoted certain poskim, I think it's in the Shevet Alevi, and the Imre Yosher, who say that therefore there is a mitzvah to experience pain during Mila, we should not diminish the pain, just like Avram Avinu, who increased his pain. So now we would assume that Avram Avinu had to be in pain. It was unavoidable, or even if he did increase his pain, that was some sort of Midas Hasidus, but that's not necessarily something which we have to impose upon the child. So the two assumptions are that there is pain experienced, which let's assume that's true, and that there's a mitzvah to reduce the pain. So can one use an anesthetic during Mila? So I think in the Nishmas Avram, by the way, the Sfida Yesh has a long, I think it's in the packet, the Sfida Yesh has a tshuva where he makes this point, the Medrash by Avram Avinu, Rebbe Tendler's point, the Medrash by Avram Avinu was a Midas Hasidus of Avram Avinu. It wasn't something that we have to impose across the board. Anyway, but in the Nishmas Avram, he says he scoured perspective of the Mekubalim on this idea. Maybe there's some sort of Kabbalah Indian to have pain during Mila, and none of them provided any source that there has to be pain during Mila, and it should be permissible to use some sort of local anesthetic. So the Nishmas Avram quotes from, I think, from Rabbi Yashiv and Rabbi Shlomo Zalman, that it's permissible to use a local anesthetic if the parents are concerned about it. None of them say you have to. Rabbi Temler felt you have to. Because there's a mitzvah to be my tzar. You're not allowed to increase tzar. They say you're allowed to. So if the parents want to, you can. In the Encyclopedia Hilchatit Rifuit, Dr. Steinberg points out none of them all of them do it because it makes the Makom HaMila slippery. They never want to introduce more things to the area than have to be introduced, and it's another factor which they have to consider, which they don't want to introduce. So Bittendler made his point that you could wipe it off or use alcohol and take it off and then it won't affect the slipperiness. Okay, that's the back and forth. So Bittendler felt you have to use it. Some poskim hold, the Imre Yosher holds, you're not allowed to use it because Avram Avinu had tzar, and I think the general consensus of poskim is Nishmas Avram quotes from Shlomo Zalman. But yes, you can use it if you want to. Yeah.
If it's a mitzvah on the father, then what's the... What is the kid getting? So it's on the father. It is. What is the kid?
See, what does he need the tzar for?
Right.
You say maybe Avraham Avinu was different because he was older.
Right.
Yeah, but we really hold it's not a mitzvah on the father, it's a mitzvah on the child.
You
know, yeah. It's only one mitzvah. How could one mitzvah change?
I mean, how could you possibly be mitzvah?
Right, I don't think that position is that convincing. That I mean, it doesn't fit with any of the things that we know
really,
about.
I mean, even if
we don't believe in increasing tzar.
Even if it isn't the baby's mitzvah, even if it's the kid's mitzvah, I mean, you can't say that he has any
it's strange.
You know, like anything he does or anything he feels.
It's strange on a number of levels. You're right, okay. It's strange on a number of levels. We don't accept that, but I think the other approach is that it's slippery, and again, maybe the pain is much more short-lived than the studies might indicate. All reasons, perhaps, not necessarily to mandate it. I've never seen it used other than when Rabbi Tamar is officiating.
But
his Talmidim.
You don't have to use a topical anesthetic necessarily.
What other anesthetic do you
mean?
An IV anesthetic?
I don't know. Yeah,
or some sort of... That's a sarcoma. I would assume that's some sort of... anytime you introduce... That's another reason they don't like using it. Is anytime you give medication to the child, there's some risk of something. I don't know what.
Okay, well, Rabbi Tendler pointed out that even just giving the baby sugar water helps decrease the pain. So
all the mother won't do that.
Many of them, yeah.
Well, they all do that.
They don't do that in the hospital.
No. What if this is all topical anesthetic? However, the Sfida Yesh has a tshuva. What about a full anesthetic? You have a guy, let's say, who's a Baal tshuva when he's older, or this comes, we're going to discuss it more in Hilchos Geirus. A guy comes to be Megayer, so he wants to have Mila. But let's talk about just the Mila case. If the guy is 35, he realized he never had a kashrut on Mila, wants to be, he's a Baal tshuva, now he wants Mila. So you're going to tell him, and you know, there's no anesthetic, by the way. That's going to be a tough sell. So they want to know what about, so even a topical anesthetic, a little lidocaine is not that helpful either. What about a general anesthetic? So the Sfida Yesh has a tshuva, where he says he cannot use a general anesthetic for Mila because mitzvah strichas kavana, and he's not going to have kavana during the Maisa Mila. The Marsham is a tshuva like that too.
Sfida Yesh.
Yes, Sfida Yesh. I think most of the Marma comments I'm going to quote are in the packet. The Zecher Yitzchak, Itzel Lepanovicher, disagrees with the Sfida Yesh, and he says you can use, perhaps it's possible to use, to argue that it's permissible to use a full anesthetic. Why? What about mitzvah Sfichas Kavanah, and he's not going to be awake? So the answer is maybe the mitzvah is not the Maisa Mitzvah per se. Maybe it's not the action of Mila. Maybe it's the status, the matzav of being Mahul. If that's the case, so then he'll have Kavanah. When he wakes up, he'll have Kavanah that he's Mahul. Or maybe there's the whole topic of mitzvah tzrichos kavanah doesn't apply if it's not a maisa mitzvah, if it's a status.
You say since an 8-day-old baby can't possibly have kavanah b'chol, so...
We're not talking about an 8-day baby. We're talking about a
35-year-old baby. Since an 8-day-old baby can't have kavanah.
A, you could try and figure it out from there. B, so there's nothing gained by the baby being awake. You could, if for whatever reason you felt it was worthwhile to put the baby under general anesthesia...
Mm-hmm. Yeah. This also might be related to the
Sometimes the baby's asleep. So like if this adult is asleep, you have to wake him up.
I think then we would apply Zeb's point. Oh, if the adult is asleep? Oh, we creep up him in the middle of the night? What do you mean he's asleep? He's an adult. And if he knows we're going to do that, he won't be able to fall asleep. And Simon Rei Samach Aleph, the...
he might wake up too.
The Ramah discusses, when is the Chi of Karis applied? The Shochnar says, V'mo Malchai of Karis, and the Ramah says, V'chol Yom, Obrim Ba'on Shneilu. Every single day he gets Karis. Now the Groz in Sivkat and Beis points out that the Ramah disagrees. That's the opinion of the Ravid, that every single day there's Karis. Every single day he doesn't do Mila, there's Karis. The Rambam disagrees and he says, no, once he dies and he hasn't performed Mila in his life, then there's Kares once he's dead. While there's no Kares every single day. What does this issue depend on? So there's a tshuva in the Ben Poras, is a tshuva sefer from Rabbi Yosef Engel. So he explains in the Ben Poras that he thinks perhaps this is dependent on this issue as well. If the nature of the mitzvah is to be mahul, status issue. So then every single day that you're not mahul, you've negated this mitzvah, so you can be chayav kares. The fact that you're going to perform mila tomorrow doesn't relate to the fact that yesterday you weren't mahul. Rabbi Yosef Engel. But if the nature of the mitzvah of mila is to perform the action of mila, then what's the mitzvah? The mitzvah is perform the action of mila once in your life. It's not to perform it many times, one time. So as long as you perform it at any point in your life, true, you've been mavato or mitzvah sesei for a certain period of time, but you wouldn't get the chiyuv kares because you did perform the mitzvah in the end of the day. Also might be related to this issue. It also seems to be related to the issue, this issue of pushing off the mila. Meaning, how serious is pushing off the mila? Is pushing off the mila like a bittul of the mitzvah? Or perhaps you still get the same mitzvah, maybe it's just some sort of zrizus issue. According to the Ravid, every single day, maybe every single second, we'll talk about it in a second, you're negating the mitzvah. The mitzvah is a status issue, to be mahul. This issue comes up a little bit later in Simei Reish Samach Beis. The Taz there in Gimel discusses a tinok who was sick. So he missed the eighth day. Now he gets better, and he got better on a Thursday. So can he do the mila on a Thursday? So the problem is that the we know from Rashi, I think Rashi and Chumash says that the hardest day after the mila is the third day. So what's gonna? So if they do mila on Thursday, Shabbos is gonna be very difficult for him. So what? So the Gemara says in Masechta Shabbos that ema fligim besfina gimel yom and kodem haShabbos. You're not allowed to take a boat trip 3 days before Shabbos, because ki'ilu masna l'chal osa Shabbos. It's as if you're stating, when you do this on Thursday, you go on a boat trip, so you're going, it's as if you know you're going to have to violate Shabbos because boats were dangerous, and then it would lead to chilul Shabbos. So by going on Thursday, you're showing, I don't care for the fact that Shabbos is in 3 days. If you go on Tuesday, Shabbos doesn't relate to Tuesday, but if it goes on, you don't have to be thinking about Shabbos already on Tuesday, but if you go on Thursday, then it shows it's as if you're violating Shabbos now on Thursday. So too over here, since the hardest day after the mila is Shabbos, if he'll do the mila on Thursday, then it'll be kiyu masna l'chal asa Shabbos. So the Taz says he can't do the mila on Thursday. Then he goes further and he says, not only that, you can't do it on Friday, because if Shabbos is going to be difficult, whoa, the third day after the mila, what about the second day after the mila is going to be also difficult? So if to do it on Friday, you also shouldn't do it. You have to push it off to Sunday. So if the kid gets better on a Thursday, you have to push the mila off to the Taz, Sifka and Gimel. You have to push it off to Sunday. So the Shaf disagrees. Yeah.
Since when do babies have to keep Shabbos?
No, if you do the mila, you're going to have to be Mechal Shabbos for the child.
Okay, you can't have the Tsar.
No, the Tsar, what's the problem of being the Tsar on Shabbos? Is you're going to have to be Mechal Shabbos to help him.
Oh.
That's the problem. So the Shach and Sivkot and Yud Ches disagrees on 2 points. So he says, first of all, the Gemara says, when are you not allowed to go on a boat trip, Gimel Yom Kodem HaShabbos, if it's L'dvar HaRashus, I'm going on a business trip. If it's L'dvar Mitzvah, you are allowed to go. So over here also, that's what the Gemara says. So over here also, this is like a L'dvar Mitzvah. He's doing it because of the Mitzvah of Mila, so you should be allowed to do it on Thursday. And then he disagrees and he says, no, the Mesorah was that the third day after the Mila is the most difficult. So if that's the case, that the third day after the meal is most difficult, it's just Thursday. See, even if you want to say that you shouldn't do it before Shabbos, it should just be Thursday. It shouldn't be Friday as well. So Shach disagrees on both points. So I think that's the prevalent minog, is that if a child gets better, we would do the mila, Shalom Bismana, either on a Thursday or a Friday. Katzenstein, I think Rabbi Katzenstein, who does the mila on the other side of the Heights, has some sort of Chumra over here. I used to think he passed in like the Taz, that he won't do a Mila Shalom Bizman on a Thursday or a Friday, but then someone else told me that no, he has some sort of on his own. That they have the second day after the meal is the hardest. I don't know, if you bump into him, you could ask him about his position, but he has some sort of unique position about this. But maybe I'm mistaken, but I thought most Molim would do a Mila Shalom Bizman on a Thursday or a Friday. The Pisrei Tshuva here in Sifkat Beis.
Are we expecting to have to break Shabbos?
Huh? You might have to.
Why?
But what? Why? Let's say the child's not feeling well. You have to call the doctor. Very logical thing.
It's not something definite, like you have to boil the water to wash the babies. It's a possibility.
No, we don't boil water to wash the baby. We're not talking about that. I mean, maybe it would be. You have to bathe the baby.
Well, in the time that we first encode these halachas,
yeah, they were bathing the baby.
That was considered separate the pashas.
We
don't exactly look at it the same way now. But we obviously want to keep the baby in a clean environment.
Of course.
So this is about something that's definite or about something that's
might
a
happen.
Question?
Might happen. Yeah.
So the chakra of the reason that they arrived it for this point? Is that
like... No. We're going to get them. We're going to get round down
with that. The chakra arrived at it, really the issue shouldn't necessarily change because you can only take into account the Ram arrived it retroactively. You can't necessarily assume that the baby's going to live another day. In which case, the Ram arrived it is the same.
You think we should be choshen on the Misa?
Yeah.
I thought we're choshen on the Misa was man Meruba, not was man... For a day or two, or we
I don't know.
However, the Pisrei Tshuva there in Sifkat and Beis discusses because of this issue of pushing off the Mila. So the Poskim say you're only allowed to push off the Mila though over here if the child is sick, or because the Taz said you're going to look like you're violating Shabbos. But other than that, you're not supposed to push off a Mila Shalom Bismana to a Sunday just because it's more convenient. So I think the Pisrei Tshuva caused the Noda Behuda that they would push them off to Erev Pesach. If they had a Migdal Shel Bizman, they push it off to Erev Pesach, and that way they get out of making a Siyum or something like that. So the Noda Behuda was upset about that Minhag that he heard about because there's an issue of Zrizos, first of all. Zrizos Magdimel HaMitzvahs. But then he goes on and he says that there's a Bitul HaMitzvah. Every single day that you push off the Mila, some sort of Bitul HaMitzvah, which is reminiscent of the Ravid, that every single day, if the mitzvah is to be mahul, so it's not just zrizos to do it earlier. It's every single day you're giving up on the mitzvah, because the mitzvah is a status issue, not necessarily to perform an action.
Did you say when they were pushing it off from?
No.
It was supposed to be Purim and they did it Erev Pesach, or it was supposed to be, you know, your gimel, and they took it away there and not have to make a seal.
You go look at it yourself. It's a kohen beis. The Gilead Marashah also discusses at the beginning, all the way back at the beginning, Simei Reish Samech, the issue of two children. If you have two children to be mal on the same day in shul, one is a mila bismana, one is a mila shalo bismana. So which one comes first? So I think the Gilead Marashah says you do the mila bismana first, because mitzvah chaviva b'shaita. The Dvar Avram, this is in the packet. The Dvar Avram is a tshuva where he says, no, the mila shalo bismana has to be first. Because if the mitzvah is to be mahul, this is obviously his assumption, but he says, if the mitzvah is to be mahul, every single second, the mila bismana, you have the whole eighth day to do it. You're not supposed to be mahul probably to the end of the eighth day, so you have the whole eighth day. The mila shalo bismana, it's already late, so every single second that you push it off, it's a big deal. So here, the Zecher Yitzchak has a tshuva about this issue also, where he takes the other side of the argument. And he says, who said the mitzvah is to be mahu? Maybe it's to do the ma'isa mila. If it's to do the ma'isa mila, it doesn't make a difference every single second. It's each, it would be an issue of tzrizos. So maybe mitzvah, chaviva b'shaita. The Zecher Yitzchak. Again, but it's just, this issue depends on the same point. The name, the characters are not the important part. The important part is, and it depends on the same issue. The Gilead Marashah felt we should do mitzvah chaviva b'shaita because the mila shalo bismana, you don't have to do it this. It's not imperative to do it right now. The Rav Ram argued, if the mitzvah is to be mahul, perhaps the mila shalo bismana is worse. Because every single second that you don't do mila, you've been mevato a certain aspect of the mitzvah. Don't rush. Yeshiva guys always know about this Dvar Avram, and then you bring it up with the mole and they laugh at you, because nobody, we don't consider the hours. You know, obviously, that happens a lot. You have a tinok, a baby, happened to me, you have a baby who was in the hospital, NICU or whatever, and it comes out way after the eighth day. And then, you know, we're going to have to start counting 7 days, meyes liyes, which we'll get to by the chola, called gufo. So then the meyes liyes could be they took him off took him out of the incubator, you know, 3 p.m. So now 7 days, meyes liyes is 3 p.m. So you want to do the mila punk 3 p.m. So most mohim, you know, you have to be normal. I mean, but I made a bris at 5:30 p.m. My son's bris was at 5:30 because it was meyes liyes. It wasn't exactly at that point. It was like meyes liyes was like 11:30 or something. But nobody's going to come to a bris at 11:30, so we pushed it off till supper time. But you have to be normal about it. Nobody takes the Dvar Avram that seriously. But the issue is, it's a serious one.
They have a minion?
They have more than a minion, yeah.
What do you do in the winter?
What do you mean, what are you doing in the winter?
If the day's going to end at 4.
The day's going to end at 4:30.
And the Meis Lieis is 3 o'clock, so maybe you should push it off to the next day. Whatever the mole tells you, that's what you do. But again, you want to get it in that day, you can get it in that day. But don't start with the mole. You know, it's 3 o'clock. Oh, it's 3:10. Yeah, no, nobody takes that seriously.
Is that going to be on the test, Charlie?
Do whatever the mole tells you. There is a discussion, though, if you have, this comes up by, we're going to get to it later. Whenever you have a conflict between Berov Am and Zrizus, which one comes first? We'll get to that later. Moving along, in Siman Reis Samach Beis, the Shulchan Aruch discusses a Tinok who was sick, who got better. So the distinction is, if he was a Choli Kol Gufo, so you have to wait 7 days Mieis Lieis from the time that he gets better. If he's not a Choli Kol Gufo, just a Chole, Mixas Gufo, so whenever he gets better, right away you can do the meal. You don't have to wait 7 days Mieis Lieis. What is a Choli Kol Gufo? So the Ma'arik explains it's where there's a suffix sakana. If there's no sakana, if he's in a life-threatening situation, it's a choli kol gufo. If he's not in a life-threatening situation, it's mixas haguf. Okay, but what's the threshold of chola then? So the shach implies here that whoever has tsar, as long as he has pain, not life-threatening, but if he has pain, that's a chola, and you push off the mila. If it's life-threatening, that's choli kol gufo, and you'd wait 7 days mieis lieis. So does that mean every baby has a diaper rash, so you push off the meal? It doesn't mean, yeah, there's obviously a line here which has to be drawn. There's real tsar versus some sort of normal, everyday tsar. What's the idea of waiting 7 days in Meis Lieis? So I think it's in the packet. The Binyan Tzion has a tshuva where he thinks that this idea of waiting 7 days is a din d'oraisa. You must wait 7 days. That's why he thinks if a person does a meal within that 7 days Meis Lieis, the meal is no good, and he has a suffix if you need hatafas dambris. Rabbi Tamar also, I think, subscribed to that. I think that's what he said in Shia. However, the Nishmas Avram, he quotes from Rosh Hashanah Zalman, and this is, I think, the generally accepted approach, is that it's not the Oraisa, it's Din Midrabanan. Because we don't want to, you know, some sort of, we push it off. We don't want to have to get involved in life-threatening Shia, so we push it off 7 days Mieis Lieis. But it's not a Din Midrabanan. And if you would do it within the 7 days Mieis Lieis, the meal would be good. Not sure. I don't think he quotes a mocha.
Is it Kane there or
anything? What is considered a choli kol guf? Just things that come up. I wanted to discuss a few things that come up. What is considered a choli kol gufo? What is considered not a choli kol gufo? So Rabbi Tendler quoted from Rabbi Moshe that an underweight child, this is important, anything which is developmental, if it's underweight, so it just hasn't developed fully, so then that's not a choli kol gufo. He would push it off a little bit until he becomes a little more robust, but it's not a choli kol gufo. However, the Nishmas Avram, Dr. Abraham, points out that even though sometimes they put a child in an incubator, really, also just to mostly premature babies to finish off you know, some of the development that didn't happen in the womb, nonetheless, we consider an incubator to be choli kol gufo. However, there's a journal that's put out called Asya, Medical Shilas. And when they finish, you know, a bunch of journals, they put them in a book. They print a book, Sefer Asya. So in the Asya, in one of the volumes of Asya, they point out, but sometimes doctors put pro forma, they just put a child in the incubator. Oh, he has this, they put him in the incubator. It doesn't necessarily mean that it's choli kol gufo. So you have to discuss with the doctor, why is the child in the incubator? I think Rabbi Tamar also mentioned it. I think he said you should lobby to get the child taken out of the incubator. The lights. Yeah, the lights, right. But even an incubator, sometimes they just put them in the incubator. Often when child has blue lights, he's put in an incubator because the blue lights are hooked up to the incubator. Doesn't mean he needed the incubator, it's just that that's where the blue lights are. But generally, being in an incubator is considered a choli kol gufo. A fever also is discussed here in Shulchan Aruch Chalatz Tochama. I think it says here in Shulchan Aruch, it is a choli kol gufo. That means he has a fever. So Nishmas Avram points out every single fever, you have to wait 7 days Mieis Lieis. So he thinks, no, there's a low-grade fever and a high-grade fever. A high-grade fever is Sakanas Nefashos, so that would be Choli Kol Gufo. And a low-grade fever is a Tsar, so we push off the meal until the temperature comes back to normal. But he wouldn't have to wait 7 days Mieis Lieis. So he draws a line, 100 degrees or something. That's 100.5 degrees. It's a Choli. Mm-hmm. Above that, Dr. Abraham, above that is a Choli Kol Gufo. Less than that is a... is just a cholera. But you can, you know, you have to ask the doctor what type of fever is it. What about antibiotic? This is a fascinating discussion. So the Nishmas Avram, he points out from Rishon Zalman Orbach that every, and this is important to know in lots of areas of halacha, every infection is a suffix sakana. The risk of infection is suffix sakana. People die. So if a child has to be on antibiotics, so he has to wait 7 days miyes liyes. 7 days miyes liyes from what? Let's say you put the kid on antibiotics, and the third day already he's not expressing symptoms anymore. So now you start counting the miyes liyes, or you start counting miyes liyes from the time that you finish the regimen of antibiotics. So I think in the Nishmas Avram, he quotes from Shlomo Zalman that it's 7 days from the end of the symptoms. So if he's not symptomatic after the third day or something, you can start counting 7 days miyes liyes from then. Schefter disagrees that it's from the end of the regimen of antibiotics. It's a big difference. And then you kind of back to the binyan tziyah. What if you do it early? Maybe it helps dumper. So you have to keep all these things in mind. Well, but a lot of times what happens is the doctor will put the child on antibiotics. He's not sure if he needs antibiotics, but they'll put them on prophylactically. So what if they? So Dr. Steinberg has a suffix. I'm not sure. I meant to ask Rabbi Tengler this this year, but about antibiotics that are given if you're not sure he has infection, but you don't want to take the risk, so they put that kid on antibiotics. So it's probably, if he ends up developing the infection, I don't know if you'll ever know if he ends up developing the infection. I don't know. So he's a suffix about that. Comes up a lot. Shulchan Aruch and Siman Reish Samech Gimel discusses the Tinok HaYarok, the yellow baby. Rabbi Tendler gave us the background is based on the elevated levels of bilirubin, and that causes the, it can't break down the bilirubin, and therefore the child is yellow. But as Rabbi Tendler pointed out, there are two types, there are two reasons this might happen, pathological and physiological. One is because the child is sick, and then Rabbi Tendler felt if he's sick, the meal should be pushed off 7 days, or the child is fine. And it's just it's developmental on the third or fourth or fifth day, then it starts to go down. It's just the way that the development happens. And as we mentioned before, developmental issues generally are not considered a cholera. So Rabbi Tendler felt then the meal could be done even while the child is yellow. So that's why Rabbi Tendler felt manafshach. If the child is yellow and it's pathological, should have to wait 7 days miyes liyes. If the child, it's only physiological, he's not finished developing, then you should do the meal right away. You shouldn't be waiting at all. Problem is, though, if you look in Shulchan Aruch, where is this? It doesn't say that. I think it says in Shulchan Aruch, when the color returns to normal, then you do the meal right away. I don't think it says in Shulchan Aruch, you wait till 7 days miyes liyes. So, I think that's what it says in Shulchan Aruch. So according to Rabbi Tengler, that corresponds to nothing. Because if it's pathological, you have to wait 7 days miyes liyes. If it's physiological, you should be doing the milah right away. So what is the Shulchan Aruch talking about? That you wait until the color returns to normal and then you do milah. The behavior always used to mention this to Rabbi Tengler and Shia, that according to what he's saying, it doesn't read well into the Shulchan Aruch. Most poskim, though, assume Shlomo Zalman and Amenezer, all the poskim who discuss it, the Nishmas Avram also has the whole list. That whenever it, I'm sorry. It says what it says in Shulchan Aruch is that when it comes back to normal, so then you do the milah right away. So there's a machlokas haposkim. According to Rabbi Tendler, again, let's put Rabbi Tendler aside. According to Rabbi Tendler, it's either pathological or physiological, and you should either be waiting 7 days miyes liyes, or you should be doing the milah right away. But for those who are more literal or loyal to what it says in the text of the Shulchan Aruch, it says that when it returns to normal, then you could do the milah right away. So there's a machlokas haposkim. I think of Shlomo Zalman and Avnei Nezer say that when it begins to go down, you don't have to wait till the child's color returns fully to normal. Once it begins to go down, I can tell already that it's physiological, not pathological. So once it doesn't mean in Shulchan Aruch, once it went all the way down, it means once it has started to go down, then I know it's pathological, not physical. I'm sorry. It's because he's not fully developed, not because he's sick. However, the Minchas Yitzchok and Rabbi Yashiv and Rabbi Bleich feels this way also, is that no, it has to be. Here's an article about it, one of the contemporary halakha problems, that what the child's color must return fully to normal. Just because we know that it's physiological and it started to go down and now he's processing the bilirubin doesn't make a difference. says in Shulchan Aruch, you have to wait for the child's koach to return to normal. V'yachzer mareu kamari shar katanim. So sotu, that's the halacha. You have to wait for the koach to return fully and not be yellow at all. Most poskim, though, do distinguish. This is quoted in the Nishma Savra. Most poskim do distinguish between very elevated levels of bilirubin, in which case the child is really b'sakonas nefashos, and you'd have to wait 7 days meyas lies from when it returns to normal or from when it starts going down, versus somewhat elevated levels of bilirubin. But it's not that it's become life-threatening. Just it's like a tsar. It's like the child isn't well. So then once it returns to normal, you would do the mila right away. And that's what the Shulchan Aruch is talking about, the middle level. It's somewhat elevated, but not fully elevated. If it's fully elevated, then you'd have to wait 7 days miyas liyas. Not fully elevated, you'd wait for his koach to return to normal, and then you mal him then. And if it's not elevated at all, then you do the mila right away. The problem with Rabbi Tumler was that he said there's only the two extremes. There is no middle ground. If he's not pathological, it's not sakanas nefashos, then it's nothing. But the Shulchan Aruch... Once it starts going down. Yeah, but he wanted to say, then you know it's physiological, and you could do the mila, you could do the.
Yeah, but if the Adonis are just starting checking the day four.
No, but they would agree. I'm sorry?
It sounds like the only difference between the Adonis and the Rabbi Tumler is that the Adonis are starting to check the day on day eight, whereas the Rabbi Tumler, you could say, start checking the day on day three or day four. Meaning, because they both agree that as long as it's going down.
Let's say it's a 14.
As long as it's going down, then you know it's
not. No, and then we all know that it's developmental, and everyone would agree. But Rabbi Tumler was trying to say, if it's not that elevated, I think he made this point. Unless it's severely elevated, we assume that it's physiological. I think he made that point. If it's exceedingly elevated, so then it's the 7 days meyas lies. If it's not elevated, he didn't say you have to wait for it to start going down. I thought he said if it's just elevated a little bit, so then we know that that's physiological. Every child.
Oh,
right.
He said that it's very elevated and goes down.
If it starts going down, everybody agrees. Exactly. Then most would agree with him.
Right.
Or Black would disagree, and others would disagree. But most would agree once we know it's physiological. I think most agree that we tell them. Once they know it's physiological, then they'll consider doing the mila. So Rabbi Tumler wanted us to start a campaign to start doing mila on yellow babies. But I think one point to consider, though, is I've made this point in previous conversations, is that we look here in the Shulchan Aruch and Sif Aleph, he says, "V'tzarech lizoyer ma'od be'ilu advarim." You have to be very careful with these things. She'ein ma'om v'ad she'esh b'chashash foli. We don't ma'o child who has a chashash foli. She'ef shalo limo la'chazman. You can do the mila after a time. V'ef shalo ha'asen ef shachtu nishel elom. You can't, if you make a mistake, it's indelible, and if you don't make a mistake, you can always do the mila later. So better be safe than sorry, basically. So I'm not. I don't know. We find such a why over here? Even if it's a minuscule chance, why? Because mila, the Gemara says, is a suffix akana. The Gemara Baba Kama says alecha haragnu kol hayom, based on the pasuk that we sacrifice ourselves to you every single day. So the Gemara says, Zu Milo. The Milo itself is a Sakhanas Nefasha. So once someone is already the Sakhanas Nefasha, so any little thing could tip the scale one way or the other way. More here to talk about. But either way, since the child is already the Sakhanas Nefasha, and the Rambam, which is quoted by the Shulchan Aruch, says, should be extra careful about these things. We shouldn't be, so perhaps we shouldn't necessarily be making campaigns to do things early. Worst comes to worst, they push it off. Push it off. The Shulchan Aruch and Siman Reish Samach Gimel Sif Beis discusses parents who have children who keep dying from mila. So the Shulchan Aruch says if two brothers died from mila, so the third child, you wait, Achon is Gadol, Vinismali Koko. Is that it? You wait for him to get older until his koach is v'yischazik koach, achiyigdol v'yischazik koach, until he gets stronger, then you do mila. That's the opinion of the Rambam. In the Pesukei Teshuva, Sifkat in Hei, he quotes from the Nevi Yehuda that many Rishonim disagree with this Rambam. It never says that in the Gemara. It says when the first two children die from mila, the third child, you don't do the mila at all. The Rambam introduced this idea that you must, when he gets older, you wait for him to get stronger, then you do mila. So the Nevi Yehuda says if it wouldn't be for the opinion of the Rambam, he would have said you should never do mila. Some say this corresponds to what we call hemophilia. The problem with that is, if you know anything about hemophilia, you might know that it's gender-related. It gets passed down on the X chromosome. So then it should only go from mother to should only go from mother to son. Can't come from father to son, because the father only gives the Y chromosome, it doesn't give the X chromosome to a son. Father donates the Y chromosome and the mother gives the X chromosome. So if hemophilia is a sex-linked trait, then it's the X chromosome, not the Y chromosome. Can't get passed down from father to son. But here in Sif Beis, but it would only be af of min ha'em, not brothers from the father. So, but the Shulchan Aruch here discusses brothers from the same father too. Maybe they didn't know that. Actually, to my focus here in Shulchan Aruch, what about brothers from the father?
Even if it is a sex-related thing, there's no reason that they would know that. Either the brother did die or the brother didn't die.
Yeah. So maybe it is, maybe it isn't. That's what seems to be my focus here in Shulchan Aruch, whether it only applies to brothers, you know, aim.
You can't have two wives. You can't have two wives that have the trait of hemophilia.
You could, but that's
that wouldn't be established a chazaka, the fact that the first brother died relating to the second brother from not being the same aim.
But if it's echad machmas aviv.
Right.
If your father marries
same father,
two women,
different wives.
Two wives, and they both happen to have that trait. So
exactly. So Ritalin normally points out, I don't know, did he point it out this time? That nowadays, in order to help a hemophilic, they have an injection. Did he mention this time?
No.
That most hemophilics are missing a factor. They're blood clotting factors. So things in the blood which make the blood clot. So most hemophiliacs are missing what they think is called factor 5 or factor 8. I think it's factor 5. So a hemophiliac now, they could give an injection and the blood will clot for 24 hours until the injection wears off. So now they can make mu on a hemophiliac by giving him the injection. Does he have to do that though? So Rabbi Tendler assumed, yeah, he has to do that. Now that we have this injection for the hemophiliac, you must take the injection and then it lasts for a few days and do the mu within that time period. However, the Nishmas Avram, I think, quotes from Rabbi Neuber, the author of the Shmir Shabbos Kilchah, said that you don't have to take the injection. The guy's a cholin. He's a hemophiliac. He's not bleeding now. He's not expressing symptoms now, but he's walking around with a major issue. So he's a cholin. So he doesn't have to do milo like that. You came up with a concoction for him to do milo. He doesn't have to take that risk. However, I think in the Nishmas Avram, he quotes with Shlomo Zalman, who disagreed with Rabbi Neuber, that even though he's not... since right now he's not expressing any symptoms, so he's healthy. And if you can give him a shot to make sure he doesn't express symptoms, then he's obligated to take the shot and make milo, just like Rabbi Tendler said.
Rabbi?
Yes?
Let's say the third kid doesn't get milo.
Yeah.
Can he marry a Jew?
Yeah, no. It's my focus. We showed him about him eating chuma. It's my focus. Rashi and Tosfos.
And he's completely
Jewish. Yeah, sure.
Yeah. Can his father?
Can his father? My focus is Rashi and Tosfos. What?
A person who doesn't have this tour can marry a Jew.
No.
Yeah, but this guy with
the tour. Yeah,
but the issue. A guy without a tour could
marry
a Jew.
No, unrelated. Yeah.
He's saying it just an aro, a Jewish aro.
Yeah, a Jewish aro. Oh,
yeah. The Gemara Maseches Shabbos has a suffix or machlokas about a noad mohu. As Rabbi Tama pointed out, we don't have noad mohu bismanenu, but what is the status of a noad mohu? So one opinion in the Gemara is that he requires hatofas dambris. One opinion in the Gemara is he doesn't require hatofas dambris. What's the machlokas? So the Gemara explains, is he considered mohu because he's noad mohu? Or maybe we're afraid that there's a arla kvusha, a suppressed arla. Then the Gemara has a further machlokas. Says, what machlokas does he need a tavas dan bris or not? And then there's a further machlokas. If he needs a tavas dan bris, is it a suffik that he needs? Suffik arwa kvusha? Or no, if he's no one mohol, there's a vadai arwa kvusha. There's for sure a suppressed arwa. So now an afkamina, if it will be doicha Shabbos. If it's a vadai arwa kvusha, it will be doicha Shabbos. If it's a suffik, it won't be doicha Shabbos. So in Shulchan Aruch here, in Simarej Samuch Gimel Siv Dawid, we pass in that a no one mohol requires a tavas dan bris. Later on, Shulchan Aruch Simen Reish Samach Vav Siv Yud, we're passing that it's not Doicha Shabbos. So it sounds like we're passing there is an Arla Kavusha, but it's a Safek Arla Kavusha. So we do Hatovas Dambris, but it's not Docha Shamas. Mishmas Yaakov, though, here in Pisrei Chuvas of Kot and Yud, I think he just says, I'm B'chuvas Mishmas Yaakov. So what the Mishmas Yaakov says, if you look it up, is he quotes a Rambam. The Rambam says that a person who is no Admohu is allowed to eat from Truma. So Mishmas Yaakov asks, how is he allowed to eat from Truma? But if he has a Safik or a Kavusha, maybe he's an Ariel. An Ariel is not allowed to eat Truma. So how could the Rambam say he's allowed to eat Truma? So Mishmas Yaakov develops the principle that this mitzvah of Hatavas Dam Bris is not about any Orla Kavusha at all.
And what does Dam Bris
help an Orla Kavusha? But we're going to discuss what does Hatavas Dam Bris mean. But the Mishnah Yaakov says that this is a separate mitzvah of doing Hatavas Dam Bris. Part of the mitzvah of Mila is there's Mila, we're going to discuss, there's Priya, and there's a third part to Mila. The third part here, which is called Hatofas Dambris, and that's what this child is missing. He's no Admoho, so you can't do Milo, you can't do Priya, but you can still do Hatofas Dambris. So then you have to do Hatofas Dambris. That's why the Rambam feels he can still eat from Truma, because there really is no Orla here. How does he know? Because the Gemara there discusses doing Hatofas Dambris on a Gershon is Gaya. And he had Milo while he was a Goy. Let's say while he was a non-Jew, they did Milo. Now he's Nisgaya. So the Gemara is a Suffolk. Part of this suffix, does he need Hatavas Dam Bris or not? So the Mishmas Yaakov says there the issue can't be one of an Arla Kavusha. There's no suppressed Arla by he had Mila. Rather, the issue is since it's true, Mila and Priya you can't do anymore, they're gone. But maybe you could at least get the third part of Mila, which is the Hatavas Dam Bris. So many Akronim, Reb Chaim has a piece in the stencils, which is in the packet, and the Zecher Yitzchak also has a piece about this, that they all subscribe to this notion that there is a third part to Mila. There's Mila, Priya, and Hatavas Dam Bris, just like the Mishnah Yaakov said. It's not because there's an Arla Kavusha, it's a separate, independent mitzvah. That's why Rabbi Tamler pointed out, most of the poskim were against using the clam, which was a bloodless Mila. Why were they against using the clam? So the Sefer HaBris quoted from Rabbi Henkin, because there's a special mitzvah of Hatavas Dam Bris. So if you use the clamp, even though you have Mila, you have Priya, you don't have this third aspect called Hatavas Dam Bris. As we mentioned, Rav Moshe has in the Tshuva, he wasn't sure if you did use the clamp, whether you need Hatavas Dam Bris or you don't need Hatavas Dam Bris. Maybe he wasn't sure if B'diavad, we're really choshish for this or not. But the issue would be that the reason why you need blood at a Mila is to fulfill this separate mitzvah of Hatavas Dam Bris. What is Hatavas Dam Bris all about also relates to what does Hatavas Dam Bris mean. The Gemara there says that one of the Amoraim was trying to do Hatavas Dam Bris on his child and he almost made him into a krus shafa. So the Meiri says, wow, what does it sound? Hatavas Dam Bris sounds like a very serious procedure. He almost made his child a krus shafa. So Meiri says, yes, it involves removing the upper layer of skin from the whole Atara. That's a major surgery. That's what the Meiri says. Most of the Rishonim, though, do not accept that. The Whereas Arua says, no, it involves removing a little bit of dam. A drop. The Betelner gave his example with a hypodermic needle. You could do Hatavas Dam Bris. Most of the poskim quote the Chazon Ish, who went even further, that all you need is Nitzur Hadam. You just have to cause the press on the Makom HaMila, and then the blood gathers. Bruise or they press a little bit, and that's even less traumatic than using a hypodermic needle. You don't actually have to remove blood at all, as long as the blood gathers, that fulfills the mitzvah of Hatavas Dam Bris. Cousinish.
Should that allow for the clam also?
No, I don't think so. Awesome. I don't think blood I don't know, I've never seen one, but
the blood just
gets cut off. I don't know if it gathers. Interesting. I don't know.
The possibility of doing Hatavas Dam Bris with the there's always a theoretical possibility.
It's a very good point. Most of the posts I make are like the Chazon Ish. That you could all you need is Nitzur Hadam.
You could always say that you use the clamp and then you do Hatavas Dam Bris.
What did I tell you said the clamp needs to do this on? You just do it very quickly.
No, his point, Rabbi Tamler's point about the clamp was he made a chop. He has a chop. He used to bring it in.
That's the second chop.
His chop was to carve out a piece. So part of the Orha Orwa remains attached, and when you do cut that, there'll be a drop of blood. So he thought that was good enough. That was his chop. As long as you have some blood, you can yell to the mitzvah of Hatavas Dam Bris. The Achronim have a machlokas. Where is the makam of Hatafas Dambris? Some poskim say that I think the Sefer Abris and the Otsar Abris have the same machlokas. Some say it's on the Atara, the upper part of the Atara, and some say no, it's where the Ar HaArla connects to the Gid. Those are two separate places. So, Eretenler, I think, assumed that it was where the Ar HaArla attached to the Gid, I think, not on the Atara itself. But most post, I think what they quote, I've never seen Hatafas Dambris, but the Otsar Bris says that what the minig is that they try and fulfill both by doing it on the border between the two, somewhere on the Atara, which is also pretty close to the place where the Ar would attach to the Gid if it would be there. Why? Because the Atara is a place that you're trying to remove the Arla from, so maybe you should do the Hatafas Dambris there, but that's not where the bleeding would have happened if you had done a meal. The bleeding would have happened where the Arla had attached to the Gid, so maybe you should do the Hatafas Dambris there. So they try and do both, but I think the minhag is that they just press and there's Nitzra Hadam. Yes?
How many kids are born without
Arla? And the Drushim have a few.
What?
How many people were Noah and Mahu throughout history, you think?
I mean, like, is this a common or like,
very uncommon. But Hatavas Dambris is common. Noah and Mahu, we're going to see Hatavas Dambris comes up in other circumstances.
Okay.
Yeah. For example, this. In Simon Reish Sam, Simon Reish Sam, Reish Sip Aleph, it says in Shulchan Aruch, you shouldn't do Mila. The Pasuk says, Vayom Hashmini Yimom Asar Alasav. The milah should happen on the Yom HaShmini, so it has to be during the day, and on the eighth day. So during the day, most mitzvahs which have to be during the day, the Mishnah says in Maseches Megillah, have to be la'achar HaNeitzach HaMa. That's what it says in Shulchan Aruch. You should not do milah before HaNeitzach HaMa. The Ramah says, Mishaol Amud HaShachar, Yo Yotze, Lechatzilo, you shouldn't do that. Shasar Chak, if you can't do the milah, cannot possibly do the milah afterwards. You know, you could be makel to do it before, but really it should be done after HaNeitzach HaMa. So this often happens. So let's say people want to make, let's say sometimes Netzach Hama is later. So this always comes up, but even without Netzach Hama, it comes up by every bris. You're still supposed to do the mila right after Netzach Hama, as soon as you can, because it's Zizim HaKdim and LaMitzvahs. But if you do the mila too early, nobody's going to come. So you want to wait. There's also an idea that Gemara says, a Berovam Hadras Melech. So which takes precedence? Zizim HaKdim and LaMitzvahs or Berovam? So say Chemin has a machlokas about this, which is preferable. Zerizus, it comes up by a lot of mitzvahs. Zerizus or Berovam. So he quotes from the Gemara. Well, it's machlokas. How to interpret the Gemara Rosh Hashanah? The Gemara says in Maseches Rosh Hashanah that really we should blow Tkiyah Shofar by Shachris. On Rosh Hashanah, the only reason we don't blow Tkiyah Shofar by Shachris is because of Gzeres HaMelech. That's why we blow by Musaf. The Sechemin says, you see from there that Zrizus is better than Berovam, because lots of people come late to shul. So he says, well, more people be there by Musaf than by Shachris, so we should always blow by Musaf, because of Berovam. So he says, must be that Zrizus beats out Berovam. That's his raya. Then he quotes that, I think, from Shlomo Vilner, who disagreed, and he said that, no, Musaf, you don't know if people are going to come. Let's say I call 100 people for the meal, and they tell me, we just can't make it that early. Make it a little bit later, we'll be able to come. So the Vaday coming. Berovam by there, by Musaf and Rosh Hashanah, you don't know if they're coming. They may not come. If it's raining, they won't come either. So if you know they're going to come, though, then Berovam beats out Jesus. Okay, it comes up by every meal. So you can, let's say you push it off. You push it off to a normal time so people can come. How late can you push it off? Suppose come quote from the Chazon Ish, you shouldn't push it off past 9 o'clock. I don't know where this, probably Chazon Ish, by Sternbach. Shuvas van Hagas quotes from the Chazon Ish, you shouldn't push it off past 9 o'clock in order to fulfill Berovam. I don't know. But in Pesach Yitshuva and Shemim Reish Samach Beis, of Cut and Beis, a fascinating discussion. He quotes from the Shavuos Yaakov, that often if they would have a mila on the Shabbos or Yontif, he says that what would happen, the Chazanim would sing lots of Nigunim and this and that, and by the time they get to the mila, it's after Chatzos. So he says, that's wrong. You should stop that. The Pisrei Tshuva, Sukkot and Beis, Reish Samach Beis, Sukkot and Beis, in the name of the Shavuos Yaakov. So he has a language there because if you do that, it's like you're Mavatol Zrizos. Yeah. You look it up. Are you saying on Bay's base? So the Otsar Bris says it sounds like that he's developing a new principle. That after Chatzos, it's no longer the same period of time. Until Chatzos, it's Boker. So Vayashkim Avram Baboker, Avram got up early in the morning. After it's Chatzos, it's no longer Boker, so Zrizos is over. Berovam might, we can negotiate with Zrizos because of Berovam. But if you wait till after Chatzos, it's some sort of Bitul HaMitzvah, or some sort of Bitul of Zrizos. Zrizos is over after Chatzos. After Chatzos, there's no more Zrizos. So, yeah, so you shouldn't push it off that late.
The Shabbos is having Shabbos morning before 9 o'clock is going to be very difficult.
I don't think 9 o'clock. That's why I don't think the 9 o'clock. How can that apply to Shabbos? No, and then I can do a meal before 9 o'clock on Shabbos. With the Chatzos principle is interesting. The Ramah here in Simur Reish Samach Beis. Again, the meal is supposed to be by day, and it's supposed to be on the eighth day. What if you do the meal early? Either you do the meal or you do it at night. So Ramah is an interesting distinction. The Ramah distinguishes. He says, if you're mal b'laila, then you need hatafas dambris. If you're mal the night of the eighth. If you're mal toches, within the eighth day, you don't need hatafas dambris. So the Shach doesn't like the distinction. He doesn't understand why should there be a difference between b'laila and toches. So the Shach says, both need Hatavas Dambris. They're both puzzles. So if you did the Psul, you should do Hatavas Dambris on both. Basically, the Tshuva quotes from the Shach. By accident, they did it at night. Or they, let's say a person about Tshuva, and they realized he had a Mila from a Kashmir Moa, it was at night.
Maybe the situation is that you accidentally, didn't have that.
No, you had Hatavas Dambris at night.
You have to repeat. To repeat the meal.
You have to do Hatavas Dambris instead of the meal. The meal was puzzle. It was
Bipsul. All right, so the question is whether you have to do Hatavas
Dambris. Right, yeah. So the Ramah distinguishes. If he says, since if it was done at night, you need Hatavas Dambris. If it was done Toches, you don't. So Shach says, why? Both are puzzle for meal. A puzzle meal needs Hatavas Dambris, shouldn't both require Hatavas Dambris? And the Shach Gesayah goes the other direction. He says, no, the meal is over, it's done. You did a Bipsul. Whenever you do a meal of Bipsul, this is a theme that keeps coming up in the Pisle Tshuva in the name of the Shach Gesayah. Whenever you do a meal of Bipsul, it's over, it's done. You lost your opportunity. There's no point in doing Hatavas Dambris. So Shach Gesayah disagrees the other way. He says, neither should need Hatavas Dambris.
Wouldn't
that
wrong
Tshuva? It's over, it's done.
10 years later
in
the meal?
I said they did the meal on the fourth day. It's over.
Yeah.
Fourth day and night. It's done.
You are. The Ramah.
The Ramah splits. So the Achronim explain, or Chaim has his disciple has, they all want to explain the distinction of the Ramah, and they explain based on what we said before, that Hatavas Dambris is perhaps is a separate mitzvah. What we're trying to say is you missed Mila, you missed Priya, but at least repeat the Hatavas Dambris and get that aspect of Mila. So perhaps what the Ramah held is that Laila's puzzle for this unique mitzvah of Hatavas Dambris. Maybe it doesn't have to wait till the eighth day. Mila needs the eighth day. Priya needs the eighth day. Hatavas Dambris, maybe it doesn't need the eighth day. Maybe it has its own time frame. So if that's the case, the Ramah perhaps felt Toches is kosher for the mitzvah of Hatavas Dambris. Laila is possible for Hatavas Dambris. So if you can repeat the Hatavas Dambris, you should. Or if it's Toches, it's kosher. You
so
don't have
you
to
do that. You can do the Hatavas Dambris at night.
Yes. No. Toches, not at night.
So
if they miss Hatavas Dambris.
If there's no Zman?
I don't understand the question. He has no more Orla.
He
has no Orla, so I think there's a unique. Oh, you're saying does Hatavas Dambris carry with it Karis?
Well, I question whether or not it's Mesinus or Stas.
Right. Well, I'm not sure how much weight we give to Hatavas Dambris. Is that really.
No, forget Hatavas Dambris.
He did meal at night.
It doesn't do anything after. It's
so it's over. He's no Karis. No Karis. He doesn't have an Arlo. Yeah, but he doesn't have an Arlo. Maisa, he removed the Arlo Bipsul. Oh, so if it's the Maisa Mitzvah.
Right.
Yeah. I don't know. The Gemara in Avodah Zarah has two Lashonos. Why a Nachri is puzzle for Mila. Moving along to the Reish Samach Aleph. One explanation is because it says Va'atas Brishi Tishmar, and he's not a Baal Bris. The other one is because it says Timo Yimo. And he's not a bar miwa. He's not commanded in the mitzvah of miwa. Either because he's not included in the bris or because he's not commanded in the mitzvah of miwa. Either way, everyone agrees that he's possible for miwa. However, the Gemara says, what's the difference between the two versions as to why a nachri is possible? Is it regarding a woman? Because the Gemara says a woman is a baal bris. I'm sorry, a woman is not a ben bris, not a baal bris. She's not included in the bris of miwa. But if it's because of himo yimo, you have to be commanded in there. You have to be shayach to miwa. A woman is shayach to miwa, because the Gemara says, woman is kemahal yadami. It's as if she is mahul. We would have said the other way. We would have said a woman is included in bris. She's Jewish. She's full Kedushas Israel. Just she's not commanded in miwa. Either way, the Gemara says just the opposite. But it's two lashonas in the Gemara whether or not a woman is kasha for miwa or pasul for miwa. Yeah, to be the mother. So Tosus there, and Abba Zara quotes in Machokus, Harishonim had a paskin. Is a woman kasha for miwa or is she pasul for miwa? So the Shulchan Aruch, Reish Samach Daled, says a woman is kasha for miwa. But then he adds on at the end that Yisrael Gadol is Adif Mikuam. Best to get a Yisrael Gadol. Yemiyesh Yisrael Gadol, who called him Mikuam? I don't know why. If a woman is kosher, why is he called him? Maybe because it's Machlokas. The Rama later says, right there, says, Isha lo simo. She shouldn't do it. She's kosher, but she shouldn't. So it sounds like if she would do it, would be kasher, because he doesn't say she's not allowed to. It sounds like it's kasher, just she shouldn't do it. So it sounds like he wouldn't require a toughest dambris. But it comes up in a certain situation, let's say you have a person who doesn't have a moa, who's accessible except for a female Jewish doctor. So if there's a female there who knows how to do mila, even though there's no necessary moa, maybe that would, in certain circumstances, it could be mekel to use the woman, because maybe you're right then, it sounds like she is... See his kasha. I think Rabbi Talmud wasn't sure if you have a, you could get a moel shalom bismano or a woman bismano. Which one is better? I think he wasn't sure. Sefer Bris has the same suffix.
Is there any added thing if she's the mother of the baby and the father's not around?
Hmm. I haven't seen that.
Well, doesn't it say in the Shulchan Aruch that the mother has no mitzvah? No matter what, the mother has no priority. If there's a father and a mother and a basin, the basin does.
Right.
Father, mother, and grandmother, and the father's not the grandfather.
Oh, basin is covered.
Oh, so below, so isn't that possible?
Everybody's
covered. If the father's not around, then basin is covered.
She has control over her childhood. Everybody's
I was going to discuss it. Pisvei Tshuva discusses, let's say you have the father can't do it, so does maybe the grandfather takes precedence. Why the grandfather? Sounds like... that, or I think there's something else. If there's no achniso and someone else is making achniso, so close to the kid should make the achniso. Not the, if the father's not there, someone else should make it. So it sounds like we do give preference to relatives.
Well, I don't know.
If a family wants a female Moel specifically, let's say make a statement, there's no real problem.
I didn't say that. It says, Isha lo simo. And it says, Menchei noagin lahadar achar ish. You shouldn't do that.
Right, but if she doesn't.
Is the
Mila
puzzle? No,
Mila's
not.
Mila's not
puzzle. No.
Is there just a problem to make a statement like that? Just to go ahead and do something to make a statement.
That is totally outside of the purview.
It doesn't matter. I just want to ask a question.
I hear the Rabban and HAR does the deal. So I hear.
The Shulchan Aruch says, "Afil about Ovi Kochavim, even if he's moho, should not do mila at all. But if he's mal, you don't need hatavas dambris." The Rama disagrees, and he says you do need hatavas dambris by an achri.
By an
achri, You do need hatavas dambris. Pisay Tshuva though quotes over here again from the Shagas Aryeh that no, if the mila is possible, there's no hatavas dambris. Again, he thinks once the mila is done, it's done. There's nothing you can do about hatavas. You don't gain anything by doing hatavas dambris.
You said that you should.
I think the Shulchan Aruch says no. V'mal ain tzarich la'asuv imo pam shenis. Oh, I'm sorry. The Shulchan Aruch says you don't have to do milah again. I don't know how you do milah again. Probably needs to cover some bris. And the Ramah says, no, you have to go back and do a Tavis Dan Bris, and if it's the Chuba quotes from the Shai Gazari, who doesn't like that Ramah, again, he doesn't think you gain anything by doing a Tavis Dan Bris. The Ramah also says that a Muma L'chal Shabbos B'fra Hesia, or Muma L'chal Torah Kula, are puzzle for Milo, because Dino Ka'akum. So just like a Nachri is puzzle for Milo, so do a L'chal Shabbos B'fra Hesia, or L'chal Torah Kula, Apikure, something like that, it's also puzzle for Milo. So Moshe is a tshuva where he says, according to the Ramah, that he includes it with a nachri, it sounds like he would even require hatavas dan bris if they did do the mila. However, Akiva Eger here disagrees with Akiva Eger, disagrees with the Ramah. Akiva Eger quotes from Tosus and Avodah Zarah that a mumala called Torah Kula is kosher for mila. Of course, you don't need hatavas dan bris. That's an important Rabbi Akiva Eger. A mumala will call Torah Kula, a mumala will call Shabbos for Hesia, are kosher for mila. We don't apply the rule of Dino Ka'akum. Machok Zaposim, Rav Moshe was Machmer, and Shevet Alevi has a tshuva where he's making.
Let's say somebody did that.
Don't know.
It's still be kosher, right?
According to Bikiv Eger, it's kosher. According to the Ramah, it's possible. The Ramah says it's no good.
And what we possibly do, like, even if Goy did it, it would
be. Goy did it. If a Nachri does Milah, so the Ramah says you require that of his numbers.
So Rav Moshe says he's in the.
You need Hatavas Dan Bris. Some might, so you're saying, some of you could start being Matzara things. Some might say, Nachri doesn't even require Hatavas Dan Bris. And over here, you have to keep
able. What about like a lot of the, let's say the conservative and reform meals? Like,
I don't know who the Moa is by then, though. I don't know if it's sometimes it's an Orthodox person. I was only at one reform meal and it was an Orthodox guy. He was the Moa.
I don't know.
Better than a reform doctor.
But again, you know, then you would apply, you start getting involved in the Shinish B'Shaivas and things like that. This is, again, it would be a lot more
like
complicated.
It's like a big thing. Isn't
sure.
It?
That's
know,
why
I'm
mentioning
America.
It. That's why I'm mentioning it.
Right.
Right. You
common example
consensus.
Is going to be who's
I know, I've never heard the Shaiva, but.
You mean like DF?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. In Sif Beis, the Shulchan Aruch says, in Simur Reis HaMadawad, you could be mal with anything that's sharp. Mal and b'chol da'or. However, he quotes from the Rambam, the minig is to do milah with a barzel, metal, and a nogo limo b'sakin. And even though you could have done milah with scissors or with a knife, the minig is to do it with a knife. So Aruch HaShulchan says, what is the reason for this minig? The minig is to use barzel, and the minig is to use a knife, not scissors. So Aruch HaShulchan says, because the pasuk says by Yeshua, Tarvos Tsurim. The quote from Reb Haigon, that Tsur, rock, is barzel. You look it up. That's what Aruch HaShulchan quotes from Reb Haigon. Tsur is barzel. So he says that's why he thinks the minig is developed to use barzel, just like Yehoshua used barzel. Why dafka a knife? Why not scissors? So Shef likes to quote from Mendel Kasher, has a piece in the back of the Torah Shleima, he has more extensive pieces. So one of his pieces in the back of the Torah Shleim is about this, where he says, he again, points into a common theme within the Rambam. The Rambam says a lot of times we do things, l'hotzi midei akaroyim, like with Mekadosh B'Kesef and Tabas. Some certain things that we do are l'hotzi midei akaroyim, because that's Torah Shabbal Peh, it wasn't Torah Shabbal Peh. So one of the, he thinks this also relates to l'hotzi midei akaroyim, because the pasuk says, charvos tsurim, which implies it has to be two blades. It's plural, charvos tsurim. So he said, Karoim probably assumed he had to use scissors. So Hotzim Idea Karoim, we the Rambam, which is quoted by the Shulchan Aruch, says Menagol Limo Besakin, we use specifically a one-bladed instrument, Lahot cannot do like a Karoim.
But isn't
it
specifically two-sided?
No, both are not. Most are not. You look at Rabbi Kasher, he has a piece of that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, I'm not aware. If you look at Sif Gimel over here, in Simur Reis HaMadawad, you put together Sif Gimel and Sif Hey, it discusses what parts of the, what is really considered the Or HaOrwa that has to be cut off. So the Shulchan Aruch says you have to remove, everybody's saying, we're almost done. I'd like to be almost done. Well, you have to remove the Or which covers Rov of the Atara. What if, right. If you remove rov that covers, if you remove rov of the skin that covers the atara, so what's left is called tzitzim she'ena ma'akvin. Tzitzim ha-ma'akvin, or skin which is ma'akev, leftover skin, is if you didn't remove rov, let's say I removed miut of the arwa, so that's called, the rest is called tzitzin hama'akvin, because you didn't remove enough. If you remove rov and there's some left, but it's not, it's only a miut, so the miut is really good, that's called tzitzin she'enu ma'akvin. So let's say you do the miut, and then you realize you have tzitzin she'enu ma'akvin. So if you have not finished doing the milah, so let's say the milah is on Shabbos. If you haven't finished doing the milah, meaning you're still in the process of cutting, and then you're still basically involved, and then you realize it's tzitzim hama'akvin, you can go back and cut off the tzitzim hama'akvin, tzitzim she'en hama'akvin. If it's tzitzim hama'akvin, of course you go back. The milah is not done. If you have tzitzim she'en hama'akvin, and it's on Shabbos, so if you're still involved, in lo piresh, you go back. In piresh, you don't go back on Shabbos. What about during the week? So that's the famous machlokas between the Tur and the Rambam. The Ramah here in Sif Hei passes like the Tur, whose opinion is that Bechol, during the week, you do go back for Tzitzin She'en Ma'akvin. And the opinion of the Rambam is, no, once the Mila is done, it's done. You don't go back for Tzitzin She'en Ma'akvin. You don't go back for a Miut. Even during the week. The Rambam. It's a famous piece in the Brisker Rav on the Rambam who explains why because it's hider mitzvah, and hider mitzvah is only applicable when you're forming the etzah, the real cheftza of the mitzvah. When there's no hider mitzvah outside of the context of the developing the cheftza of the mitzvah. So according to the Rambam, once you've done the milah is over. To go back now and do a hider doesn't relate to the cheftza of the mitzvah. The cheftza of the mitzvah is done already. This is the piece of hider mitzvah.
Yeah, right. That's the famous.
This is the famous piece. But we happen to pass in like the Tur, the opinion that Brisker Rav doesn't like, or that doesn't fit in with his idea. The Tur's opinion is you do go back, Bechol, even for Tzitzin She'en Ma'akim. Pisle Chuba here in Sifkan Tezvav, Kosh Meshach Gesariah, who distinguishes between.
You
could
go back if you want to,
I don't know. If you don't have to, maybe it's Chavah. I don't know. You don't gain anything, so it's pointless.
Well, if you claim the mitzvah isn't the maisa, but
yeah,
so it is a hider in
no.
The
because it's continuing.
On the ongoing mitzvah.
Oh, excellent, very possible, very possible. Pisay Shuvah and Sifkan Tezvav quotes from the Shagazari who distinguishes between a healthy child. Again, the opinion of the Torah is you do go back, so you distinguish between a healthy child, a very big child, a weaker child, maybe a weaker child that shouldn't go back. Interesting distinction. Important discussion here is in the Shach's of Cut and Test. It's hard to get on your own. The Shach's is discussing what is technically considered. You have to remove the R which covers Rov of the Atara. What is considered the Atara? So there's a machlokas between I think the Rambam and the Chacham HaSfardi. Most of the Rishonim and the Chacham HaSfardi. Most of the Rishonim believe that you have to remove Rov of the skin that covers the upper part of the Eva, you know, what we would call the Atara. The top of the Eivar HaZachras, that's the Atara. The opinion of the Chacham HaSfardi is that no, it's the widest part of what we call the Atara. It's a ring that goes around. Rav Shechter gave the mashal to Machlokas. The Rishonim seem to be disputing what type of crown are we talking about? What type of Atara? Is it like a cap or like a crown, or is it more of a wreath? That type of crown. So the Chacham HaSfardi says it's a line, the chut misaviv. What he calls it. I'm sorry. Yeah, the chut misaviv. He calls it the line that goes around the widest part of the atara, what we call the atara. That is where you have to remove rov. So let's say you remove rov of the skin, you megala rov of the top part of the atara, but the line around, you haven't finished rov. So according to the Chacham HaSfardi, you haven't completed mila. That would be tzitzim hama'akvin. According to most of the Rishonim, that would be called rov of the atara.
Are you
the diagrams on the test? No. But the terms that the Shach uses, you have to know. You have to know what they mean. According to the... I hope I'm not getting too graphic over here, but according to the Chacham HaSfardi, the Sefer HaBris has a further machlokas. He quotes a story there from the Tshuva. It's actually a Tshuva in the Binyan Tzion. That a guy saw his friend in the bathhouse, you know, older man, you know, two older men walking around the bathhouse. So he sees his friend and he sees that his makom hamila doesn't look like everybody else. Most of the time, what it's supposed to look like, that even behind the atara there's a charitz. The gid doesn't go straight into the atara. There's a charitz before the atara. this fellow, the gid, went straight into the Atara. There was no charitz behind the Atara. It's on Rabbi Tendler's diagram. This charitz, the corona or something like that. So he said, I don't think your meal is good. So they went to the binyan seer. I think it's actually a tshuva to Rav Shimshon Rafael Hirsch. It's a fascinating tshuva. So in that tshuva, he discusses when the chacham. The only discussion is for the chacham Asfardi. For the other Rishonim, it's the whole atara. So of course that's not rov. Even if that was part of the makom hamila, it's at least a meal. It's irrelevant. But according to the chacham Asfardi, that it means the chut misaviv. Does it mean the chut misaviv with the charitz? Does it go all the way down to the charitz, or perhaps it's only the chut misaviv without this charitz behind the atara? So I think he thinks. I believe he says in the Binyan Siyan that he's machmir, that it means the charitz as well. But then he says, even though this fellow's mila doesn't look the right way, and this is an important rule to keep in mind, he says, just like the Shulchan Aruch and the Gemara has a rule by Shkita, Rov Mitzuyin Eitzel Shkita, Mumchen Hei, most people don't get involved in Shkita unless they know what they're doing, so too most people don't get involved in mila unless they know what they're doing. So you have the right to assume the mila was done properly, the Hechsher, and then after time, the skin creeped closer to the Atar. As we're going to see later in the Shulchan Aruch, that does happen.
Yeah, if you were worried about that kind of thing later, you know, the skin sagging later or something like that, so why would we not be concerned about the tzitzit and shukran ma'akri? Because all they're going to do is just distort the...
No, there's a difference between the meal not being done properly the first time and the meal being done properly, but then the skin creeps back. That's different. Meal was done. It's going to creep back. The meal is kosher. We're going to see in a second. But the it's a Mara sign. That's this Shulchan Aruch here. And Siv Vav. Katan Shibsar Rach Medudo. A heavy child. So a lot of this happens. A lot. Lisa, that they'll do the meal. And then the skin starts to creep back over the Makam HaMila. So the Moa will tell it. If the Moa, you know, tells you, most should tell you, that if you have a child where that's a chashash, they can pick out the children where that might happen. And what you do is you clean out the skin with alcohol or whatever to make sure that the skin doesn't stick to the atara. And then it just remains separate skin. But sometimes it starts to creep back and it sticks, it adheres to the skin. And once it adheres to the skin for a significant period of time, it becomes like reattached. And in order to detach it, you need a whole, like, another meal, like a procedure to remove it. It becomes painful. So better, or the mole will pull it down or something like that, which should be painful for the child. So what you're supposed to do is keep it clean, or keep it with the alcohol to make sure it doesn't attach. But it does happen. So the Shulchan Aruch there says, if it happens, so you have to do mila again because of a maris ayin. Now the Ramah quotes from the Trumas Hadeshen, that's only if it's rov covered. If rov of the atar is covered, let's say rov of the atar is megula, just the miut is covered. So what are people going to accuse you of? Not doing a mahudr dikim mila, but you did do a mila. So the Ramah says there's no maris ayin over there, because the robe of the atara is uncovered. And the Taz disagrees, and the Shach agrees with the Shach defends the Ramah. You look over there for the details. The Shach thinks that no, even if a miut is covered, there's a maris ayin. Anyway, so there in the Shulchan Aruch he says, when you're checking, how do you check to see if the skin started to creep back the atara? There's two times you could check. You could either check when the aver is berafa, or when it's bekishoy, when it's erect. So when do you check? Do you check when it's berafa or bekishoy? So Shulchan Aruch says over there, you check when the aver is bekishoy. Then it's much less, much more unlikely that it will be covering the atara if it's bekishoy. If it's berafa, then it's harder to tell. So there, the Shach has a machlokas again between Rav Rishonim and the Chacham Asfardi. When do we check b'shas kishoy? Only for this maris ayin? Or let's say we're checking whether or not rov of the atara is megua. Is that also we check b'shas kishoy? Or you only check, or you even have to check when the aver is berifui, berafa? Now that's a big difference only for the Chacham Asfardi. Because for the Chacham Asfardi, he says it's the chut misavid, it's that widest point of the atara that goes all the way around that circumference. So then it makes a big difference if the aver is bekishoy or if the aver is birafa. So if you look there in the Pesach Chuvas of Katan Tezayin, of course most of the Achronim agreed with the Chacham Asfardi. We're machmir. I think we're machmir also by the previous Shaila, that you need the robe of the chut misaviv, and you have to check when the aver is birafa, not when the aver is bekishoy. So this Sefer Abris, Rabbi Peretinsky, who was also, I think he was one of the Rabbanim who built the Manhattan area originally, but he was also a Moel. So he's experienced. So he says you have to be careful with all this. If you take the Chacham Asfardi's Chumrah with the Chut Misaviv, and then you take the Chacham Asfardi's Chumrah, which all we accept, then you take the Chacham Asfardi's Chumrah with the fact that you're checking with Eber's Rafa, and then you take even with the Charitz, the Binyan Sion's Charitz, so you might end up taking off too much skin. So you have to be careful with Chumras. Yeah. Sif Dalid, Shulchan Aruch discusses the second part of Mila, which is the Priya.
How far are we going?
Huh?
How long are we going?
How long are we going? I hope to finish in the next 15 minutes. Is that okay with you? Pisle Chuvin Sifka in Yud Gimel. Over there, quotes a Chamude Daniel, that it doesn't work to push the Or HaOrla back. By Priya, again, I think Rabbi Tengel pointed out, they would cut off the Or HaOrla and then pull back the Or HaPriya. So by Or HaOrla, though, you can't pull it back. Why not? Because it sounds like the Chachmas Adam explains, the mitzvah of Mila is not to push back, it's not to uncover the Orla, it's not to uncover the Atara, it's to remove the Or HaOrla. If it would just be about uncovering the Atara, then you could push it back. It's not about that. It's about removing the Or HaOrla. Now we do Mila and Priya B'Bas Achas. So those who are obsessed about that it's a minhag chadash, you're not allowed to change the minhagim. How can we start doing Mila and Priya B'Bas Achas? I think it's safe for our bris, but maybe Tamil quoted this also. Quotes from Rabbi Haigon already, that he said, Hani Bavloi, there were certain Babylonians who were Bekiyim in Mila, and they were able to be Ma'u Upara B'Bas Achas. It was already an old minag, the Mila and Priya B'Bas Achas. Here in the Shulchan Aruch Sif Dalid, it says, Mal v'lo para kilo lo mal. If you do Mila without Priya, it's as if you never did any Mila. Does it mean that the Mila is incomplete, or does it mean that the Mila is totally insignificant? Sorry? Yeah. Mal v'lo para kilo lo mal. So I'm asking a question. Does it mean that it's incomplete? But it's something. Or does it mean it's totally insignificant? So if you look later in Siman Reish Samach Vav, all the way to the end, Sif Yud Dalid, he points out the old minhag was that there used to be Mechabed, one person with Mila and one person with Priya. So the Shulchan Aruch says, but you shouldn't do that on Shabbos. Why? Because you're increasing Chilul Shabbos. So one now, two people are being Mechal Shabbos as opposed to one. And the Ramah says, no, you're allowed to. You could even split it up on Shabbos. And the Gra there explains, because Mila on Shabbos is Hutra, it's not Techuya. The Shulchan Aruch felt it's Techuya, so you shouldn't be Marbeb in Chilul Shabbos. The Ramah feels it's Hutra, so you can even ask two people to do it. Fine. In the Pesach Chuba there, Sifkat and Tez Zayin, he quotes from the Yam Shel Shlomo.
Then it's really the Mila Bismana,
you never do Mila Shlomo Bismana on Shabbos. No, Mila Shlomo Bismana is not Dov Shabbos. So Pisli Tshuva quotes from the Yam Shel Shlomo, who disagrees, the Ramah says again, you could do it on Shabbos. Why? Because Mila on Shabbos is Hutra, so you can even do one person do the Mila, one person do the Priya. So Yam Shel Shlomo says, no, you can't, not because Mila on Shabbos is the Chuya, which could be what the Shulchan Aruch was arguing, for a different reason. Because Mal v'lo Paras, ki de lo Mal, so the first person who you mechabed with the Mila did nothing. So it sounds like the Yam Shel Shlomo believes this is literally, ki Ilu lo ma'al means you did nothing. Not that it's insufficient. You did nothing. And the Ramah holds Mila without Priya is something. That's why you can split up the Mila and the Priya on Shabbos. It is something, but it's not. It just means here that it's not complete. Rabbi Talmud discussed the Metzitza issue. I don't want to belabor that point. But his point was that even though the Gemara says you have to do mitzitza, that was only because of sakana. And he brought a proof from the Shulchan Aruch and Hilchos Shabbos and Shin Lamed Aleph that even though the Gemara says we also used to wash the baby in hot water after the meal because of sakana. But we don't do that anymore because we have better antiseptics. So too, mitzitza was only mishum sakana. You shouldn't have to, you shouldn't have to do it anymore because it's only... Mishum Sakana. Therefore, he felt that those who want to insist they have to do Mitzitza B'Peh. He felt you certainly don't have to do Mitzitza B'Peh because it's only Mishum Sakana. And moreover, I think he was even not sure if he could do Mitzitza on Shabbos at all, even B'Kli, because it's not Mishum If it's only mishum sakana, now we have better antiseptics. So then, if you motzi dam on Shabbos, it should be a chilul Shabbos. However, the Avnei Nezer, well, no, it's nothing. It's not part of the mitzvah mi'ula. The Avnei Nezer points out that even though the Gemara does say this, the Avnei Nezer Rabbi Tendler quoted, but I just want to tell you what he says. The Avnei Nezer says it's convincing, somewhat convincing argument that even though yes, the Gemara does say it started out being mishum refuah. But now that they that became protocol, it became part of the mitzvah of Mila. So now, even though we know it's not Mishum Sakana, you still have to keep doing it. Why? Why is it any different than washing the baby? How can washing the baby then become part of the mitzvah of Mila? Also, the Avnei Nezer says, because over here there's a kiyum in doing mitzitza. What's the kiyum? Hatafas Dambris. By sucking out the blood, you're increasing in the Hatafas Dambris. So the Avnei Nezer says, even though it started out being Mishum Refuah, you have to continue doing it, and it would be Dorcha Shabbos. But you don't have to do a pipet, you can enough to do it with the kli. So most of the poskim over the generations of Hasam Sofer, Yitzhak Ochana, and the Chaim Ozer, if you look and do your research, most of the poskim felt Reb Chaim. There's a safer story in the Nefesh HaRav with Reb Chaim that he said, I'll let you do Mitzitza Bekli. Meaning like, I'll let you do Mitzitza Bekli, not the sermon, not Mitzitza Pipet. And they all held the mitzitza was part of Mila, but it's enough with a kli, you don't have to do a pipet. But then what happened a few years ago, anyway, you could research the history of the politics of it, what happened in America. But some poskim now still insist that you have to do mitzitza bepeh. So the RCA put out a letter 4 or 5 years ago, which was signed by most of the Rashi Yeshiva here, that you should do mitzitza with a tube. That's the common practice. But there were those who insisted, no, it had to be bepeh without a tube. There's a whole book called Bris Krusel Vestasayim. All the shittas about this one topic. It does happen though. I have a friend who's a pediatrician in Williamsburg, and he said he's never seen it. It happens. The herpes cases come in because of they don't know why, but the parents never look into it. But he that's what he suspects. Anyway, moving on to the Or Chaim section of Hilchos Mila.
Wait.
Yeah.
You say that happens a lot.
Happens.
There's like one moel on my
surface. They don't know. That was what happened to Rabbi Tendler. That there was one moel who became known to the authorities. So they accused Rabbi Tendler of telling the authorities about him. He was a moel from Muncie. So Rabbi Tendler claimed he never told the authorities. But that's what they accused him of. Mastering him to the government and involving the government, involving the Board of Health or whatever.
Why is that a problem?
What?
Seeing as how it was supposed to go shows?
Yeah, so it's a problem. This guy should not go out to England.
It's true, but the question is, how do you go about it? That was the question. Should we go to the government? Should we police ourselves, or should we ask other people to
stop? This is like what's going on with the church now.
Okay. And Simon Reis Samachay, the Shulchan Aruch quotes three opinions about when you should make the bracha of Lachnisa Bervisa Shoavram Avinu. Should you make it before, like all birchas hamitzvahs over Lasiyasan? Should you make it after, because it's a birchas shevach v'hoda? Or perhaps even if it's a Taz quotes this opinion, even if it's a birchas hamitzvah, if it's toli ba'acherim, you have to wait for the mo'el to do mila. So since it's toli ba'acherim, you can't make it over Lasiyasan. I'm not doing the mila. I have to wait for the mo'el to do mila. Then I make my Lachnisa. So you have to make it after, because it's not up to me. So the Shulchan Aruch has his hachra. The name of the Rosh, that you do it in between the Mila and the Priya, like none of them. There were three opinions, when to do it. He says, well, two opinions for three reasons. And he comes up with his compromise to do it in between the Mila and the Priya. What do you do b'zman hazeh, that we're ma'u upar b'bas achas? So when do you make the bracha now? The Shachter felt, you can't make it before, because the Shulchan Aruch says, we don't make it before, we make it in between. So you can't make it in between. We're ma'al par b'vazach. So we make it after. So there's no rush. Once the mo'al makes the mila, so then the father can make the rachmiso b'viso sham avinu in due time. However, the poskim quote from Ramosha that Ramosha felt that no, as some sort of kiyum in what the Shulchan Aruch said of being making the bracha between the mila and the priya, we should make it right after the mo'al makes the mila. That's when you should rush. To make the bracha of Achmis Bavisa Shalom Avinu right away to kind of get some sort of kiyum in the Shulchan Aruch of doing a meal pre Bavas Achas. So sometimes you'll see a father who stands right next to the mom rushes to say the Achmis Bavisa Shalom Avinu. That's like this sort of motion. So the Seder of Mila goes the following. First you make, the Moro makes the Alamila, he performs the Mila, then the father makes Achnisa, Revisa, Shalom, Ravino, then they wrap the baby up, and they give it to someone who holds the baby, has Amida, that's a kibbutz. Someone else makes a Bari Priya Gafin, and then makes the Bracha Shekada, she did me Bethan. Then usually they give the baby to someone else, and someone else makes the Kriya Shem. When do you drink the wine? So there's a cup of wine. The person first makes a Bari Priya Gafin, then a Shekada, she did me Bethan. When do you drink the cup of wine? So the Torah quotes three Minhagim, who drinks the wine? Or when do you drink the wine? The first Minuk in the Torah is that you make it after the Kriya Shem, all the way when you're done. So the person, it's not necessarily the person who made that Shekada, she did me Bethan. You make it all the way at the end.
We all usually
know.
We
don't
do one
person
makes all of us. No, usually split up. The other minhag in the Torah is that you always give it to the tinok. And the other opinion in the Torah is that you drink it right away after Asher Kadosh Yedim Yibetan. So the guy makes a bar piyah gafen, Asher Kadosh Yedim Yibetan, drinks the wine, and then gives it to the other guy to make the kriya shem.
The baby, the wine's done. Right.
Usually they hold the coats for the Kriya Shem.
Okay.
And someone else holds the baby. So you give him this half drunk cup of wine, and or you could fill it up, a Kos Pugim. I think Rosh Hashanah pointed out there's no Indian of Kos Pugim by making a Kriya Shem. So sometimes you'll see they'll fill up the cup of wine. I hear that. Sometimes they won't fill up the cup of wine. I can hear that too. What's the minig? The minig is that the person who makes I think the minig in most places is that after the Kriya Shem, they give it back to the guy who made the bracha. I'm sorry. The three minhagim are the following. Either way, the guy who makes the Bari Priya Gafen is the one who's drinking, not the guy who made the Kriya Shem. The three minhagim are either he makes the Bari Priya Gafen, Asher Kadosh Shimi Bet, and then he gives it to the guy who makes the Kriya Shem, then they give him back the wine and he drinks. Or they give it to the Tinok. Or he drinks right after Asher Kadosh Shimi Bet, and then gives a half drunk cup of wine to the guy who makes the Kriya Shem. Either way, he has to be the one, either him or the Tinok, has to be the one who's drinking. So that's the minhag. The minhag is that the common custom is that after the Kriya Shem, they give it back to the guy who made the Bari Priya Gafen to drink from. However, there's a letter from one of Rabbi Kivager's writings or biography, and Rav Moshe has this also in the Tshuva, that you should drink right after the Asher Kadosh Yedim Yibetan. And that's the minhag Rav Shechter does that. I've seen that by a bunch of other people. They drink right after Asher Kadosh Yedim Yibetan, and they don't wait until after the Kriya Shem to take the kos back.
Would that third one or fourth one?
That would be like minhag number...
No one says wait after the Kriya Shem.
No, it's Asher Kadosh Yedim Yibetan, and it's supposed to be our kos. That's the whole point. So I think I think what is the common custom is, you know, at least not in local circles, is to after at the end you give it back to the guy who made the Bari Priya Gafen.
Does the Bari Priya Gafen guy do the Asher Kadosh?
Yeah, he makes Bari Priya Gafen Asher Kadosh, then they give it to someone else to make the Kriya Shem. So the common custom, I think, is after the Kriya Shem, the guy takes the cup back and drinks. But many, like Rabbi Kivager and Ramosha and others, drink right after the Asher Kadosh Yedim Yibetan, and then they give the kos to the guy to make the Kriya Shem. So that's why some will fill up the kos, some won't fill up the kos. The Taz in Aruch Chaim says you have to drink a melol lugma, a whole cheekful. Chacham Sadim disagrees and says you don't have to drink a whole melol lugma. But I think Rav Shechter pointed out, even if you have to drink a whole melol lugma, it doesn't have to be at that point. So everyone's watching you, you're on the video, and you're making your Asher Kadosh Yedim Yibetan, and then you want to drink it before you give it to the guy to be ashamed. You're seeing it gulping the cup of wine. Looks a little strange. So you should take a sip, give it to the guy to make the Kriya Shem, because it's a hefsek issue. How can he make a Kriya Shem after I made my Bari Priya Gafen and I haven't drunk yet? So I take a sip, I give it to him to make the Kriya Shem, and then afterwards I take the cup back and I drink the whole melol lugma. The Kriya Shem, the meaning to do is to do it at the Mila, is based on a comment in the Mate Moshe. Why do we make a Kriya Shem at the Mila? Because Avram Avinu got his name changed in Mila. So that's why we make the Kriya Shem at Mila. It doesn't have to be at the Mila, but that's the minute. But if you have a sick child, whose Mila is going to be pushed off, some poskim hold it's a good idea to give, for various reasons, to give the baby a name earlier. You don't have to wait, let's say he's going to be in the hospital 6 months. So you don't have to call it for 6 months. You can give it a name, and then like you would make for a girl. You make a Misha Berach, and it's a Karishmo Yisrael, and then you give the baby a name. And then Shulchan Aruch and Sif Ches over here. the last thing. The halacha is that amigo bezmana is docha Shabbos. Amigo shelo bezmana is not docha Shabbos. What if the baby is born b'bein hashmashes? So it's not docha Shabbos. It's a suffix amigo bezmana, suffix amigo shelo bezmana. So Shach over there in Sifka Yudalef discusses, well, what about the Gaonim and Rabbeinu Tam? What is called bein hashmashes? So that depends on the Gaonim and the Rabbeinu Tam, if you're familiar with that discussion from elsewhere. The general consensus is, if there are certain people who are choshesh for the Rabbeinu Tam, so if you're choshesh for Rabbeinu Tam by Shabbos, you should be choshesh for Rabbeinu Tam here as well. Many like Eretz Israel, they go straight Gaonim. Matzei Shabbos, 25 minutes after Shkia, Shabbos is over. So if that's the way you operate normally, by Milo you don't have to be more Machmir, but if by Matzei Shabbos you are Machmir for the Rabbeinu Tam, so then over here too also you should be Machmir for the Rabbeinu Tam. Just one practical point. You should know lots of times they write the time on the birth certificate or on the documents. Often that's not correct. Because if you're ever in the room when the baby is born, you'll see lots of things happen before they write that time down. Baby comes out, wash the baby, they take a footprint, handprint, this and that. And by the time that all happens, a few minutes have passed. So you can't rely on that for what time. So if you have somebody's going to go into labor or they call you and they're going into labor on a Friday, you have to make sure you tell them, find out what time baby was really born, so you know if it's a meal of his mom, a meal of his mom.
It's not only an issue on Friday, it's an issue with...
Yeah, it's more acute on Friday, though. But you're right, it's every day. If you know it's towards the end of the day, you have to be, you always have to watch the clock. Right.
This is after the baby's completely born?
Yeah, when the baby comes out.
Meaning not...
What about Rov Padachas or things like that? I don't know. The Gemara has a suffix in Shabbos about a Yotzei Dofen. Yotzei Dofen is a Caesarean section. Is the mother Tmei Oleda or not? The baby didn't come out the normal way, so maybe she's not Tmei Oleda. What difference does it make if she's Tmei Oleda for us? The difference is that if she's Tmei Oleda, so the Gemara assumes then the Mila is Docha Shabbos. If she's not Tmei Oleda, then the Mila has to be on the 8th day. And if the Mila has to be on the 8th day, she's Docha Shabbos. If she's not Tmei Oleda, then the Mila does not have to be on the 8th day. It could be any day. The only time the Mila has to be on the 8th day, maybe, is if the mother is Tmei Oleda. If she's not Tmei Oleda, then the Mila doesn't have to be on the 8th day, and it wouldn't be Docha Shabbos. So we happen to paskin a Yotzei Dofen and Sif Yud. We paskin a Yotzei Dofen is Nimo on the 8th day. We're Machmir on both ways. So it's Nimo Leches. You can't be Mal on the 6th day, because we're Machmir, to be Mal on the 8th day. But it's not Docha Shabbos, because it's a Machlokas in the Gemara. This is a new common Shaila. It's about inseminations. Because Shlomo Zalman has a tshuva in the Mincha Shlomo regarding inseminations that he claims the mother is not Tmei Oleda, or maybe she's not Tmei Oleda, because the Gemara in Maseches Chagiga discusses Nesabra Bambati, a woman who gets pregnant in a bathhouse. There's a Zera floating around in the bathhouse and she becomes pregnant. So the Gemara calls that Maisa Nisin. So Rabbeinu Chananel there in Chagiga says, and everyone knows about Rabbeinu Chananel from Shlomo Zalman, Rabbeinu Chananel says she's not Tmei Oleda. It's my sinishin, you're not Tmei Oleda. So if she's not Tmei Oleda, the Mila doesn't have to be on the 8th day. If the Mila doesn't have to be on the 8th day, it's not Docha Shabbos. So you could have a child that was born after an insemination, and then the Mila wouldn't be Docha Shabbos. So what happens? So then everyone's going to know. It's the 8th day of Shabbos. Everyone says, Mazel Tov, oh, Shabbos brisk, great. And then you have to explain, no, the child was insemination, and then it becomes public knowledge. So what you do is you say, no, the baby's yellow. If you want to publicize it, because then, hey, most people don't want it.
It's embarrassing. You make a face wall.
Most people don't.
No, some disagree with Shlomo Zalman. But I thought the common custom was like Shlomo Zalman, and one year someone told me they don't disagree. I'm sure there are those who disagree. I thought the common custom was like Shlomo Zalman. But now it's increasingly common Shiloh. The Shulchan Aruch there in Sif Ches quotes from the Rosh that if it's Noah ben Ashmashos, not only is it not Docha Shabbos, it's not Docha Yontif, and it's not Docha Yontif Sheni, Shogolias. Suffolk Milo Bismana is not Docha Yontif Sheni, Shogolias. One second. The Shach though there, Sifkat and Ches, quotes from the Rambam who disagrees that a Suffolk Milo Bismana is Docha Yontif Sheni. With the exception of Rosh Hashanah, because Rosh Hashanah is Yuma Richta. However, the Pislei Tshuva there in Sifkat and Zion quotes from a Noda B'Yehuda. You'll read the Noda B'Yehuda and you're like, but one second, it doesn't say that in Shulchan Aruch. And you're right. The Noda B'Yehuda says the whole machlokas between the Rambam and the Rosh is not exactly the impression you get from the Shulchan Aruch. Yom Tov Sheni is not talking about a suffix with Bein Hashmashos, a suffix Milo Bismana, where it was born Bein Hashmashos. It's talking about a Vadai Milo Shelo Bismana. Vadai Milo Shelo Bismana is where you have the machlokas between the Rosh and the Rambam. The Rosh says it's not Torah Shabbos, and the Rambam says it is, with the exception of Rosh Hashanah. If you have a suffix Milo Bismana, though, no, it's not a Vadai Milo Shelo Bismana, it's a suffix Milo Bismana, then the Noda B'Yehuda claims everybody would agree it's Docha Yom Tov Sheni Shelo Goyis. So Suffolk Mil Bismana, according to the Noda B'Yehuda, is Docha Yom Tov Sheni Shelo Goyis. However, there's a tshuva in the Mishnah Rabbi Yaron where he says that he agrees with the Noda B'Yehuda with the exception of Rosh Hashanah. He says a Suffolk Mila Bismana is Docha every Yom Tov Sheni except Rosh Hashanah. Kind of along the lines of what the Rambam said. So what happens is according to the Noda B'Yehuda, if you have a Vadai Milo Shelo Bismana, it's a machlokes between the Rambam and the Rosh, and a Suffolk Milo Bismana, everybody would say it's Docha Shavit, Yom Tov Sheni, and the Mishnah Rabbi Aaron agrees with the exception of Yom Tov Sheni Rosh Hashanah. So what happens is a common shaila, because this is not only if it's born Bein Hashmashos, it's a Yotzei Dofen too. Yotzei Dofen is like a Suffolk Milo Bismana, because it's a machlokas in the Gemara and a machlokas in a paskin, even though we're machmir, we treat it as a suffix. So let's say you have a cesarean section where the bris is supposed to be on Yom Tov Sheni. So according to the Noda B'Yehuda, it would be docha Yom Tov Sheni. But if it's on Rosh Hashanah, it's a machlokas between the Noda B'Yehuda and the Mishnah Rabbi Aaron. I've been told by certain rabbanim this happens almost every year on Rosh Hashanah. A cesarean section, bris for the eighth day is Yom Tov Sheni Rosh Hashanah. Anyway, interesting shayla. Okay, shkoyach, guys. Again to the end.